We'll call this conference meeting to order. Good morning and welcome, everyone. I was talking to some of the Senate staff, and I was saying that I am a farm boy. So we, at this time in the day, back in Sleepy Eye, we have the cows milked, the chores done, and we have a full day of work in already. So nice to see you awake so early, Cap. But again, thank you all for agreeing and being willing to serve on this conference committee and for the important work and the important job that we have ahead of us. The outline for this morning, members, would be to would be my wish that we would do some brief introductions and then do have House nonpartisan staff and Senate staff do a walkthrough of the side by side, and then we would make sure we had some time for questions and answers from members, and then also we would go over the fiscal report that we have on both bills this morning, and then we'll see where it goes from there. So to start out, I think I'll throw over Senator Kelly, and we can go through some introductions.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and it will be an interesting, I know it'll be a few days because we will be done before the deadline, and I'm looking forward to working with everybody. I did want to say, Representative Sikora and I have been on four conference committees the last 4 years. This one will be a little different than the last three, Representative Sikora, but I'm glad I had a chance to do one more conference committee with Representative Sikora in her last term of service in the House, so we will work expeditiously to solve problems and come up with a good resolution between the House and the Senate. And maybe we can introduce the members of the conference committee, and then we'll do staff. Senator Higgins?
I'm State Senator Linda Higgins, representing North Minneapolis and about half of downtown. And when the Twin Stadium gets built, it will be in my district.
And I want to say that Senator Betzold is the chair of the Judiciary Committee, and he had scheduled a 9 a.m. committee meeting this morning to do confirmations for a couple nominations. So we're expect him back relatively soon. Senator Marco?
I'm State Senator Sharon Marco, and I'm from Cottage Grove, and I represent Northern Dakota County and South Washington County.
I'm Senator Julie Rosen. I live down in Fairmont. I have five counties down in southern Minnesota. I'm from Minnesota. I believe the last time I was in this this room was last year on the conference committee, and we were talking chemical castration. So I'm very happy to hear you talking about the ballpark.
On that note, we'll go over here. Representative Kelleher.
Thank you. Representative Margaret Anderson Kelleher. I represent a district of Minneapolis, half of downtown, not quite the stadium itself, but very close by to uptown, and pleased to be here, Mr. Chairman.
I'm Neil Peterson from the western part of Bloomington and the southern part of Edina.
I'm Barb Sikora. I represent 10 western suburban communities in the Lake Minnetonka area.
I'm Representative Maury Lanning from Moorhead, represent Moorhead and Northern Clay County.
Yeah, we'll let's go start with staff. We'll go around this way.
I'm Brian Steinup. I'm GOP Committee Administrator.
Dan Listug, Committee Legislative Assistant for Representative Finstead.
Jane LeFever from House Research.
Brad Kelly, Research Consultant for the House Bill Caucus.
Josh Begley, GOP Research.
Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff. And Kathy Schill, House Fiscal Staff also.
Jess Myers, I'm with Senate Majority Research.
Capitol Rourke, Committee Administrator for Senator Steve Kelly.
Alice Seifert, Legislative Assistant to Senator Kelly.
Susan Von Marshall, Senate Fiscal Staff.
I'm Joanne Selner from Senate Counsel.
All right. Well, now we all know each other. So, one job done. All right. Now, it's my intention here then to move into the side-by-side. Members, in your packet, you will have a side-by-side spreadsheet that the staff has prepared for us, and I will turn it over to this time then to Ms. LeFever to go over the side-by-side.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members. I think initially I should just point out a couple of things about the side-by-side. The Senate bill is on the left-hand side. The Senate bill has three articles. The House bill on the right-hand side has no articles. So there are things. The Senate bill has a ballpark article, a football article, and then a sort of general purpose article. Some things on the House side do correspond to things in the Senate Article 3, and when we get to those, we'll try to point those out to you. In general, the Senate bill is organized in sequential order, section by section. On the left-hand side, the House bill is not in sequential order. So if you want to see the flow of the House bill, you probably need to look at the House bill itself. There are a lot of minor language differences in the bills that we all go back to the fact that the House creates the ballpark authority and the Senate uses the Metropolitan Sports Facilities Commission. So we'll probably skip over little language differences like authority, commission, as we go through and stick to the larger differences. So to begin with, on the right-hand side, the House, as I said, creates the ballpark authority and they make members of the ballpark authorities public officials for purposes of reporting finances. Going to page R2, on the House side, you'll see that tickets to high school league tournament play are exempted from sales tax. If you skip down from there to lines 3.14 to 3.20, you'll see that the House side also provides for a transfer of those funds from the high school league to a nonprofit charitable foundation to be used to support extracurricular activities. So there is a little education in here for Senator Kelly and Representative Sikora. Then going back to the building materials exemption, both House and Senate provide a building materials exemption from sales tax. On the House side, it's structured in a way that equipment is not exempt from the sales tax unless it's incorporated into the construction. Whereas I believe on the Senate side, equipment is, if it's used in the construction, would be exempt. So I think you'd have a little different thing. Bulldozers would probably be exempt on the Senate side, whereas they would not be exempt on the House side. The House also provides an exemption, a general exemption, for building materials used by local government in capital projects. That's in House Section 4. Then moving to page R3, I believe that the purpose and findings are essentially the same. There are some small language changes. Definitions, there are some differences in the definitions that I think probably could be resolved at the staff level. The definition of team, going to page R4, is expanded in the House to include if the team changes ownership or is reconstituted, still known as the team for purposes of this. Moving to the property tax exemption, the House provides a property tax exemption for the ballpark, and maybe I'll ask Ms. Zellner to explain that in Article 3, the Senate also provides similar.
Right. Mr. Chairman, members, on page R31 of the side-by-side, the property tax exemption in the Senate bill is amended into the existing property tax exemption that applies to facilities that are currently operated by the Metropolitan Sports Facilities Commission. One of the features that distinguishes these bills is that, as Ms. LaFever said, where the House bill establishes a separate ballpark authority, the Senate bill, particularly because it includes two new sports facilities, would instead give the power to operate those, or, you know, to be involved in the construction of those facilities to the existing Metropolitan Sports Facilities Commission. That's reconstituted. We can discuss that later. But because of that, the Senate bill has been drafted to just expand some of the existing authorities of the Sports Facilities Commission, and the property tax exemption is one example of that. I'd point out just one substantive difference between the two provisions, and that is on lines 2213 to 2215 of the Senate provision on R31, that's existing language in the current sports facilities property tax exemption, and it provides that both of the bills would provide that assessments can be imposed on these facilities. Under the current sports facilities law, it provides that assessments are subject to confirmation by the Metropolitan Council. So rather than set up two different procedures for the assessments, that's in place. That's not a component of the House property tax exemption.
Thank you. Ms. Lefevre.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, members, going on to page R5, the House position requires that the ballpark authority use good faith efforts to bring in entry-level, middle management, upper management staff who are members of minority groups or female, and to use their best efforts to employ women and members of minority communities, and also to utilize minority and female-owned businesses and vendors. They also require, the House also requires a job fair to and advertising at specified agencies in an attempt to recruit minority and female employees, and to also requires a report to the Attorney General of the efforts that are made under this section. Now, Section 7 is where the ballpark authority is established. It's established as a political subdivision of the state. This requires a five-member commission, two gubernatorial appointees, two county appointees, and one appointee from the city of Minneapolis. members are compensated under Section 150575. The appointments are required to be made within 30 days of enactment, and the first meeting is required within 45 days of enactment.
And Mr. Chairman, possibly you'd want to compare what's in the House or in the Senate bill, which is further on, because again, it's cementing existing law. If you look at page R30 of the comparison, the top of the page, Section 6 changes the composition of the existing Sports Facilities Commission. This would all be effective September 1st of this year. Changes the membership as of that date so that it would include two members plus the governor, or plus the chair, which would be appointed by the governor. Of the non-chair members appointed by the governor, both of them are required to reside in a metropolitan county other than Anoka or Hennepin. And then an additional member is appointed by the city council of each of the cities of Minneapolis and Blaine, and two members are appointed by the Anoka County Board and the Hennepin County Board. And then there are provisions relating to the terms under Section 9 of the bill, starting on 2119, that describes the initial terms of these members, so that essentially half of them would end in 2010 and the other half would end in 2012, and they would then have four-year terms. We have stricken the requirement under current law for the Sports Facilities Commission that says that none of the members appointed by the city council of the city where the facility is located could be an elected public official. So this would allow appointment to the commission of elected officials that are appointed by those governing bodies.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, in the House, no member of the ballpark authority can be an elected official of Minneapolis or Hennepin, or have been for the past 2 years. So that is the difference. Returning to page R6, the House position calls for the appointment of a chair to preside at the meetings, adoption of bylaws that would work to be similar to that of the Metropolitan Sports Facilities Commission, allows for the appointment of an executive director and requires that appointment to be made within 30 days of the first meeting, and requires the establishment of a website for providing public information, which I believe is also covered in Article 3, Section 16 of the Senate side. Going on to page R7,
You know, most of the language differences in the contract section relate only to the difference in the use of the word commission versus the word authority. There are some technical language differences. There are some differences in the minority recruitment language, and just a different way of expressing that the project will be covered by the prevailing wage law. Other than that, those sections are quite similar. Starting on page R8, there is a quite a big difference in the process intended for implementation. The section 10 from the House position sets out a series of steps and deadlines for achieving those steps. It may be that you don't want us to go over this part in great detail at this point.
Ms. Lefevre, do you have, can you summarize the language as far as which version gets the job done quicker?
Well, there are tighter time deadlines in the House position, I believe. And Ms. Zellner can correct me if I'm wrong about that, but I think that they are. For instance, the deadline for agency action, the section 15.99 in statute provides deadlines for agency action, and the House position exempts this project from that section. The Senate position only exempts it from the portion of that section that allows an extension of the deadline for agency action. So I think the timelines are shorter in the House position in general.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And also, I think one other significant change that relates to the timelines is with respect to the House's establishment of the authority. And I believe that's within 30 days after the effective date. And under the Senate provision, the changes in the Sports Facilities Commission occur September 1st.
So theoretically then, if we were to pass something that looked more like the House version, we could get going within 30 days on this, but if we passed the Senate version, it wouldn't be till September 1st or thereafter.
Well, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, there's already a Sports Facilities Commission. They could begin work on the project right away and wouldn't have to wait for appointment. The September 1st timeline simply is the timeline for reconstituting the commission to reflect the changed composition and the changed interests in what we're trying to do. But since the Sports Facilities Commission is already in existence, they could be ready to go the day after final enactment without waiting for a new appointment.
Ms. Lefevre.
Okay. Let's see. I guess we move now to page R10. In general, this section reflects the difference in the amount of money that's being utilized for the team contribution. The Senate version requires 25% of the cost of a retractable roof from the team. The House does not. And then the timing of the team contribution is spelled out in the House position, requiring the deposit of $45 million to the construction fund for the first ballpark cost, and then the remainder of the team's contribution is to be used to pay the last cost of construction. The timing of the team's contribution on the Senate side is only that the contributions must be funded in cash during the construction period. The Senate position states that the cost of ballpark overruns are to be paid by the team, but excludes overruns for land, site improvements, and public infrastructure, whereas the House position requires that all cost overruns be borne by the team. There are some language differences in the reserve for capital improvements. The House position provides that if the team has already paid their contribution on a present value basis for capital improvements, then they're not subject to the inflation index that is permitted in the Senate version. On the lease and use agreements, there's additional language on the House side, which I believe is intended to establish the right to specific performance. It's the language starting on line 16.29 to the end of the page and going on to the next page. And it just talks further about the need for specific performance and that the agreements require specific performance. And there's a lot of language to this effect, and this is just additional language there on the House side. The next place where there are some differences are in the community ownership option on page R11. The right of first refusal that goes to this a community ownership corporation, if one is established, the House provides a right of first refusal to purchase the team if it's going to be sold. The House makes that acquisition subject to the rules of Major League Baseball, and the Senate side does not. The Senate limits the term during which this community ownership option can be exercised to the term of the agreement. The House has no, it's an open-ended option, right of first refusal. And the Senate, there is another provision that gives 18% of the proceeds on the sale of the team to the county on the House side, to the, I guess it's to the Met Council on the Senate side. But those funds, the public portion of the proceeds from the sale of the franchise would go to fund this community ownership option on the Senate side, but they go back to pay the bonds off on the House side.
Actually,
Ms. Elman.
Mr. Chairman, there's another difference in that in the sale of the team, and that is that the House provision requires that it would be 18% of the sale price indefinitely, but the Senate has a declining amount there, so that it declines by 1.8% for each of the first 10 years, and then it would no longer be effective. And the proceeds would be paid to the Commission and deposited in a reserve fund for improvements, or expended as the Commission could direct otherwise. And that's on 734 through 87 of that.
It's on page R13.
Thank you. Ms. Lefevre.
Mr. Chairman, members, I think starting at the top of page R13, there are a couple of things in the Senate side only relating to the design. And perhaps
beginning at the top of page R13 on the Senate side, there are a number of provisions that deal with the design of the ballpark. The first is a requirement that the ballpark have a retractable roof. The second is that the commission is required to ensure that the ballpark receives the leadership in energy and environmental design certification, and that to the extent practicable, the ballpark design would be architecturally significant. The bill would require the Department of Administration and the Department of Commerce to try to find funds to help to meet the cost of the requirements for that certification. The ballpark design is also required to follow sustainable building guidelines, and then the commission is asked to ensure that the ballpark would be, to the greatest extent practicable, constructed of American-made steel.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Lane.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. what level of LEED certification is the Senate bill presuming?
Ms. Elmer?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, this is my provision, and this, the certification is the, I believe, the first level of the LEED language. There are various names for it, but the most basic one is called certification.
Representative Lane.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So you're not intending to go all the way to the ultimate and LEED designation?
Senator Higgins.
I'd love to, Mr. Chair. But at this point, I'd like them to use the standards of the green building process. We have a wonderful opportunity because it's right next to the Hennepin Energy Resource Recovery Center. We call it the HERC, the garbage burner. And the steam that's created through that process can be used to heat the field. It can actually heat the seats. They could get really creative and actually put a conveyor belt from the bottom of the ballpark right into the garbage burner. And rather than using garbage bags and trucks to get rid of all the garbage, they drop it down to the conveyor belt and put it right into the HERC. It's only a couple of blocks away from the downtown cooling center. And if you go to the Target Center, you'll see this funny-shaped building with the kind of green circular things on the top. And it basically is the central cooling system for the entire downtown area. And because it's so close to there, it could be used very energy efficiently to hook right into that. The LEED certification has never been used on a ballpark, so they're breaking new ground on this. So that was one of the main reasons why I wanted to just use the first level of it, so that we didn't get them farther than they could actually go.
Mr. President Lane.
Okay. Well, thank you for that explanation. The other question I have on this is, has there been a fiscal note on what additional cost this might add to the construction?
Mr. Chair, there are some folks, I think, looking into this for the team. I was looking one day on the Department of Energy website, and there is a lot of money from the federal government for projects like this, and it looks like they look to be searching for kind of a flagship project that they could do. So I have suggested to the team that they start looking into those kinds of grants that are available from the federal government to help defray the cost of this. There would be costs, but being a sustainable building would mean that their operational costs as it goes forward would be less and less and less. So what money that they pay in the front would be paid for through the operation.
Thank you, Senator Higgins. Representative Lanning, write that question down. We will have the team come up and comment on that after we get through the walkthrough. I think that's a good question we need to pose to the folks in the seats. Ms. Lapeer.
Mr. Chairman, I'm now on page R13 and on the Senate side at line 8.8. These subdivisions are various things that are required to be part of the use and lease or use agreement with the team. And in general, they're more mandatory on the House side. For instance, the access to the team's audited financial statements the lease and use agreement must provide the authority access on the House side, whereas the Senate side provides that the commission must seek a provision that provides access. Again, on the no strikes or lockouts, on the House side, the authority must negotiate a public sector project labor agreement, whereas on the Senate side, the commission must use its best efforts to negotiate a public sector project labor agreement. Moving on to page R14, there's no significant difference until we get to the House side, line 18.23. And on the House side, the authority has to enter into an agreement with Major League Baseball that guarantees the continuance of the Twins in the area for the term of the agreement. There actually is a comparable provision. The facility operations section on the Senate side is comparable to lines 7.28 to 7.32 on the House side. It's just out of sync, but does match up.
Senator Kelly, you had a comment or a question?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Fever, the agreement with Major League Baseball, is that a condition of completing the lease or use agreement, or is that a direction to the authority that is separate from the lease or use agreement? I guess my question is, does proceeding with the ballpark depend on Major League Baseball's agreement to such a provision?
Mr. Chairman, yes, here. I believe that is one of the criteria and conditions for the...
So, Mr. Chairman, did the House get any testimony or any indication about Major League Baseball's openness to such a provision?
Senator Kelly, we did, I believe this was put on in the committee process, the last step, and we did have some testimony that this is, you know, something that we would rather not have seen on the bill because we don't know that it's been done. It hasn't been done before. It most likely would not be done. I pleaded my case, and the committee put it on. So I think it is something, though, that this conference committee needs to work out because this, as it's worded, is unworkable from my standpoint.
Well, I asked that question, Mr. Chairman, only because a couple days ago I was taking a few shots from the speaker regarding how certain it was that the House bill built a ballpark, and so I'm just trying to make sure I understand what the speaker was talking about.
Senator Kelly, we changed one word in that three-sentence paragraph, and that it's taken care of.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. Mr. Fever.
Mr. Chairman, the Section 8 on the House side details the powers of the ballpark authority. It's relatively comparable, I believe, to Article 3, Section 13 on the Senate side.
Mr. Chairman?
Ms. Solis.
Yes, in drafting the governance article, the Article 3, compared the powers of the authority that were in the Twins proposal with the language that's in the current Sports Facilities Commission, and where there were any significant differences, they are incorporated in the amendments that are within Article 3, but otherwise the provisions that are in Section 8 of the House bill are, with minor wording changes, the same as what is in current law.
Thank you. Ms. LaFever.
So, Mr. Chairman, now we're on page R16, the financing of the facility. This is where there's significant difference, I guess. The House provision allows the county to make grants to the authority, utilizing the proceeds of bonding. The ballpark costs in the House are capped at $260 million. Grants for capital improvement reserves are capped at $1 million annually, subject to some inflationary adjustments. The spending for land site improvements and public infrastructure is capped at $90 million in the House. The House also limits where property can be purchased. It has to with bond revenues. It has to be within 1,000 feet of the development area. And then they
Mr. Chair?
Senator Higgins.
What has to be within 1,000 feet of whatever you said?
Oh, the infrastructure, the money that's permitted to be used for infrastructure from the bond proceeds can't be expended in an area that's more than 1,000 feet from the development area.
Okay, I see. Thank you.
And then, of course, the House bill authorizes the county to impose a 0.15% sales tax within the county and exempts that sales tax from the referendum requirements for local option sales taxes, and then provides for the permitted uses of the tax revenues. And perhaps we could compare that now with what the Senate financing mechanism is.
Ms. Zellner.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, the Senate financing provision begins on page R28. That is the imposition of the Metropolitan Area Sales and Use Tax. The tax, if approved at an election, which would be held this November, the council would impose, the Metropolitan Council would impose a sales and use tax at a rate of 0.5%. And the proceeds of that tax would be used 0.5% for the purposes of the Sports Facilities Commission to finance the ballpark for the use of the Twins, including public infrastructure costs and the operating expenses of the commission, payment of debt service on the obligations, and for the cost of building a new stadium for the use of the Vikings. 0.5% of the amount that would be raised by the tax would be used by the Metropolitan Council to implement the public transit component of the Council's 2030 Transportation Policy Plan and for other public transit operations and capital improvements within the metropolitan area. The bill provides that after sufficient revenues have been raised from the tax to complete the costs of the stadium and the ballpark, then the entire amount of the tax would go for those transit purposes. Subdivision 3 is an exemption to the tax, the limitation on the total amount of lodging taxes in the city of Minneapolis, so this tax would not be counted against that limit. Subdivision 4, beginning on the top of page R29, directs the commission to allocate these tax revenues so that the Twins ballpark would have the first priority in time, and the Vikings would be staged somewhat after that, and that also the commission would be instructed to use these revenues in a way that would minimize the cost of borrowing for construction of the ballpark and the stadium. The commission is instructed to consult with the Twins and the Vikings in developing the timing for those projects. One difference, too, in the funding provision in the earlier part of the bill dealing with the issuance of bonds is that in both the Twins and the Vikings provisions, the issuance of bonds contains a condition that the bond should be issued for the minimal term that's necessary to provide interim financing with the intention of being able to pay most of the cost of the stadium out of the proceeds of the tax.
Ms. Sumner, I want to take a second here. Maybe this was the better place that I should have interjected the timing issue. Senator Kelly, you said that if your version would become law, the Sports Facility Commission could start working on it immediately without waiting for the appointments. Is there language that would direct the commission to do that before a referendum would pass or fail?
Mr. Chairman, there is not language. There's language with respect to the environmental review and other kinds of preliminary steps, but not with respect to the financing prior to completion of the referendum.
Ms. Elner.
Then, actually, the final component of that financing part of the bill on the Senate side is on page R34 that sets forth the requirements for the referendum on the sales tax. That's on section 19, requires that the referendum would be conducted in the metropolitan area the first Monday in November of 2006 and specifies the language of the question. If a majority of the voters agree with that, a majority of the electors voting on that question vote yes, then the council will impose the tax.
Ms. LaFever.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I know we're jumping around in this a little bit, and it's because of the article composition, but we would be back now on page R19.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before we move on, I'm unclear as to how the Senate bill pays for or finances infrastructure improvements relative to the stadium. Can you explain that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lanning, the infrastructure costs that would have been paid for by the county under the House bill are included in the cost provisions. I think you have to go back to R10, the subdivision 2, lines 512 to 519. And then there was another provision, too. Oh, yeah. And then R16, Mr. Chairman, Representative Lanning, public expenditures. Mr. Chairman,
Senator Kelly,
and Representative Lanning, counsel points out that we did not separate out infrastructure costs versus direct construction of the ballpark costs. We kept it all under one overall cap.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Kelly, if you look on R28, Section 1, Subdivision 2, Paragraph 1, It includes some public infrastructure costs relative to Flynn Stadium, but it only says new funding for the stadium itself. And that's what kind of threw me. It would seem to me that if the incentive intent here is to cover those, that also should be referenced in that paragraph, as are the infrastructure costs for the Twin Stadium. And maybe it's drafting here, but it seems to me that
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Kelly,
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lanning, maybe I'm not understanding your question. If you look at line 1912 to 1913, the money distributed to the Sports Facilities Commission is to finance the ballpark, including public infrastructure costs, ballpark costs, capital improvements, operating expenses, and payment of debt service. So it does. I'm not sure I'm understanding the question.
Representative Lanning.
The way this is drafted, though, it seems to me that refers to the Twin Stadium. And the new stadium for the use of Minnesota Vikings is sort of the last part of the sentence. And maybe this can be fixed with drafting. It struck me as being not clear actually from this language.
I see.
Senator Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lanning, so your point is that the reference to the Viking Stadium does not incorporate in the same paragraph the same specific references to the range of costs.
That's correct.
Okay.
All right. Lefevre.
Mr. Chairman, I guess on page R19 there's a final component to the funding mechanism on the House side, which is that the Metropolitan Sports Facilities Commission is to transfer $300,000 from its cash reserves to the county to begin the preliminary work, the expense of the preliminary work of the authority. Next, the city requirements. On the Senate side, there's a requirement that the city of Minneapolis vacate a portion of the 3rd Avenue North. There's no comparable provision on the House side. Then moving to page R20, the liquor land conveyance requirements, the liquor license requirements are the same. The charter limitations, there's just additional language clarifying that the actions taken by the City of Minneapolis, which actions don't constitute an expenditure under the charter limitation. And maybe I'll ask Ms. Selner to compare the two local tax provisions. She's the tax expert.
Right. And one other, Chairman, just one other difference I'd point out on the liquor licenses. The Senate provision authorizes the City of Minneapolis to issue additional licenses, but the House, if the authority requests it, the City is required to issue those. With respect to the local taxes, the substantive difference there is the final sentence in the House side, which specifies that the law that's currently in effect for Minneapolis, which imposes a 3% tax on admissions and amusements, would apply to admissions at the baseball park, and the Senate provision is silent on that. And I believe the effect, even though the language in the House and the Senate bill with respect to the prohibition on local units of government imposing new or additional taxes that are strictly at the ballpark site, I believe the effect of the language in both is the same. There are a couple of differences in the repealer. On the Senate side, we've repealed the provisions that were included in the 2002 Twins bill that were codified as property tax exemptions and sales tax exemptions, and also the requirement that when the Metrodome site is sold, that the money would go into a football stadium account. So that explains the differences in the repealers. Later in Article 3 of the Senate bill, we require that the proceeds of the Metrodome sale would be used to fund transit improvements.
Mr. Chairman, I think that concludes the walkthrough with regard to anything on the House side, and I don't know if there are additional things in Article 3 that Ms. Selner would want to go over at this point, or if we've pretty much touched on both.
Ms. Selner?
Article 3 begins on page R28 of the side-by-side, and I believe we've covered most of them, but we can just go through quickly. Section 1 is the Metropolitan Sales Tax. Sections 2, 3, 4, 5 deal with amendments to the existing Metropolitan Sports Facilities Law, just to ensure that references within those laws include, where appropriate, the ballpark and the football stadium. There also are definitions of ballpark and football stadiums added to the existing law. The provisions on page R30 all deal with the membership and chair of the Metropolitan Sports Facility Council members. I should point out one thing I hadn't mentioned earlier, and that is under current law, the chair of the commission is required to reside outside of the City of Minneapolis, and this proposal would strike that requirement, so the chair could reside anywhere within the metropolitan area. I should correct that. The chair would be able to reside within the City of Minneapolis. It does not require the chair to be from within the metropolitan area. Sections, getting back to page 31, section 10, again, is just extending the scope of the sports facility. Section 11 is the property tax exemption, which we discussed earlier. Section 12 is an amendment to the facility operation provision dealing with again, this is a modification of the current law, and in this chapter we've picked up where there are, where there were differences in the Vikings or the Twins proposals, where the language differed at all from the existing language of the Sports Facilities Commission. Those provisions have been added to the law. One would be on line 2234 that requires the commission to seek to promote and maximize the use of the sports facilities for additional uses. Another would be a provision that the sale of property acquired in connection with the ballpark is not subject to certain requirements in the HRA law, and that the title to the ballpark would not be transferred or sold without approval by a law enacted by the legislature. The language on the use agreement provision, section 14, beginning on page 23.21, is again language that differs from the current sports facilities law. Provides that the use agreement that relates to the ballpark can provide that the other contracting party can retain all the revenues from the operation of the ballpark. The website provision at section 16 on page 33 was a new provision in the Twins law. This has been moved into the sports facilities law. There's a slight difference on section 17 from the House provision, which dealt with the application of the business subsidy law. The House had somewhat broader language that would provide that the business subsidy law would not apply to transactions of the commission or governmental entities relating to the ballpark or related public infrastructure, and also extended to tenants of the facilities, but that's not included. The tenant aspect of that is not included in the Senate provision. In Section 18, I referred to earlier, requires that when the Metrodome is sold, the proceeds of the sale, less the cost of any demolition, would be transferred to the Metropolitan Council to use to fund transit improvements. The current law that had transferred that to a Vikings stadium fund was repealed. The election provision we mentioned earlier, Section 20, was an amendment relating to the football stadium. Provides that the expenditure of public money for infrastructure that's in connection with the convention facilities that would be constructed in the stadium, the football stadium district, would be a matter of metropolitan significance that would be subject to review by the Metropolitan Council. This provision says that the study should emphasize the extent to which the proposed new facility would adversely impact existing convention or large venue facilities in the metropolitan area, and provides that public money can't be expended on the convention facilities until the council has completed the review. The repealer there is the repealer of a membership change of the Sports Facilities Commission that was part of the 2002 Twins Law. Section 22 deals with the application of the law throughout the metropolitan area.
Mr. Chairman?
Ms. Fever.
Mr. Chairman, the House doesn't have a position that's comparable to Article 2, so I don't know if...
Ms. Selman.
Mr. Chairman, members, the text of Article 2 begins at the top of page 21. The first section is a sales tax exemption for the construction materials and equipment. And in this case, it is equipment incorporated into the construction of the stadium and does not extend to infrastructure expenditures. The exemption terminates after a year after the first National Football League game is played in the stadium. Section 2 sets forth the purpose for the construction of the stadium, that this serves the public purpose. Section 3 includes the definitions that are used in this article, refers to the stadium as a sports facilities, and specifies that it must have a retractable or fixed roof. subdivision 3 is the definition of the stadium district, and that would be a district that would be designated by the Sports Facilities Commission that contains the stadium and up to 740 contiguous acres that surround the sports facilities. Section 4 requires that the stadium would be located in the city of Blaine. Section 5 sets forth the procedures for the beginning of the construction of the football stadium. It requires the commission and the Vikings to jointly select a construction manager, and the manager would guarantee a maximum cost of construction and provide payment or performance bonds, and then deal with the processes relating to the construction. Would have to require or comply with requirements relating to the payment of prevailing wages, and would also have to include programs to provide for participation by small local businesses and businesses that are owned by women and people of color, and that would also include women and people of color in the workforces of the contractors and the ballpark operators. The provisions dealing with the bids in subdivisions 3 and the design in subdivision 4 are the same as what were included in the twins bills. This also would require the LEED certification and that the stadium design be architecturally significant. This does not specify the same requirement that was in the twins bill that expected the commissioners of administration and commerce to cooperate to find money to enable the compliance with the LEED certification to meet the cost of achieving that certification. Section 6, beginning at the top of page R23, deals with the requirements and conditions that must be met before the commission can issue its bonds and begin construction of the stadium. These are quite similar to many of the kind of boilerplate requirements that applied in the Twins Bill. There's a requirement that the commission execute a long-term lease agreement, and there's more detail on that later in the bill, and that they execute a financing agreement with the Vikings, and again, there's further information on that a couple of sections down. A number of provisions requiring the commission to have in place assurances that there will be sufficient funds for the site preparation, the construction, that the property has been acquired, that the commission try to negotiate an agreement to prevent strikes and lockouts, that it would ensure that environmental requirements would be met, and that funds are committed, and there would be sufficient guarantees to ensure that all the financing pieces are in place before the construction would begin. On page R24, line 1426, is the same provision dealing with the public share on the sale of the team that was in the Twins Bill, so that it would be in effect for the first 10 years after this became effective, after the effective date of the article. If the sale occurred in the first year, the portion of the sale price of the team would be 18%. That would decline by 1.8% for each of the next 10 years. There's an affordable access provision that was the same as was in the Twins Bill. Subdivision 16 deals with the requirement that the facility be operated as a smoke-free facility. Section 7, beginning at the top of page R25, deals with the issuance of bonds, and it specifies on line 1521 that this would include construction of a retractable roof, and that it also includes money to finance the highway improvements in the vicinity of the stadium. The bonds are limited on page 16, line 4, to a total of $510 million plus some of the cost of financing there. And again, the provision there beginning on line 6 of page 16, that the intention is that the terms of the bonds would be limited to the amount that's necessary to provide interim funding before sufficient funds would be available under the ongoing sales tax. The remainder of the bonding provision are pretty standard is pretty standard language. On page R26, section 8, is the developing and financing agreement. Requires the commission to negotiate with the Vikings, but also with Anoka County and the City of Blaine, if they intend to make contributions at all to this process concerning the conditions under which they'd make contributions to this process. Under subdivision 2, the total public investment is limited to $510 million. $395 million of that is for the stadium project costs, and $115 is for the off-site infrastructure. On page R27, subdivision 3, the Vikings contribution is required to be at least $280 million. The team contributions are defined to include contributions of land, initial cash contributions, and other cash contributions that might be made in the value of guaranteed annual payments and assignments of naming right and permanent seat licenses. The team contributions do not include the payments of the operating and maintenance expenses for the stadium. Those are required to be paid by the team. And the team is required to pay all the cost overruns for the stadium. Section 9 is the use agreement that is entered into with the Minnesota Vikings and the NFL. The agreement with the Vikings would require that the team would use the stadium for all of its scheduled home games for a period of not less than 30 years, and the agreement is required to include specific performance language. There is a requirement that the commissioner enter into an agreement with the National Football League that guarantees the presence of the Vikings in the metropolitan area for that 30-year period.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Selner, what kind of performance, are we saying they have to win a certain number of games a year? Get to the Super Bowl? The playoffs?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Higgins, no, this would be specific performance of the terms of the contract, that they would remain in place.
Okay.
That they wouldn't be able to essentially make a cash payment to get out of that.
Thanks.
And the final provision in the Vikings article is section 10 at the top of page R28, and that enables authorizes the City of Blaine to issue liquor licenses for the stadium. And this article and the other articles in the bill are all effective the day following final enactment.
All right. Ms. Selma, can you, and maybe you mentioned this and I just didn't catch it, but can you specifically talk about the Senate language that covers the transit that we've heard so much about, the provisions that the sections, just kind of briefly go over that overview, and if I missed it, I apologize.
Mr. Chairman, the references to the transit in the Senate bill are in Article 3, Section 1, is on page R28. And the references there are with respect to the use of the revenues of the tax. So it begins on a line 19.16, requires that half of the initial revenues of the tax would be used for implementation of the public transit components of the Council's 2030 Transportation Policy Plan and for other public transit operations and capital improvements. And then after both of the stadiums, both the ballpark and the stadium have been paid for, then the full amount of the tax would continue in effect and would be used for those transit purposes. The other link to the transit is that after the Metrodome has been sold, the proceeds would be used to fund transit improvements.
So just from my understanding then, Ms. Elmer, the funds would go then to the Met Council and they would
decide. It would fund their 2030 transportation plan. It would go to all the projects that are in that plan.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that's right.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Sikora.
May I just ask, does this go on forever, or is it end after they've funded their 2030 plan? Or is this half a percent go on in perpetuity, essentially?
Senator Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Sikora, there is no sunset date on the half-cent sales tax for funding transit. It would provide for ongoing projects, I assume, after that. I suspect that the legislature will mess with this provision before the year 2030 rolls around. Should we adopt it, Representative Sikora?
Mm-hmm. All right, members. I believe that is the overview. Any questions of staff at this point in regards to the side-by-side? Senator Kelly.
And maybe, Mr. Chairman, it'll get picked up in the fiscal review, but there are two tax cut provisions that I see. One is the exemption for the Minnesota State High School League, but Section 4 on page R2 is a sales tax exemption for construction materials for any building or capital project by any local government. It's not limited to the ballpark. Maybe somebody could just say a little bit about where that came from, and I understand it has a significant fiscal impact.
Yeah, thanks for that question, Senator Kelly. That was an amendment that was put on in the House Tax Committee by Representative Atkins, and I believe it had an $87 million fiscal note in the next biennium, and it was the debate was around the fact that this was a promise or a comment made to the local units of government, the counties and the cities, that when the state got on better financial grounds, this would be something that we would look at again. And that was the debate, and that was the reasoning that Representative Atkins brought that to the Tax Committee. And I can, as we turn it over to the fiscal staff, I think they can comment further on that.
Mr. Chair, members, that would actually take effect in fiscal year 2010, so it doesn't even show up in the tails. And it's $87.4 million.
Before we get into the fiscal discussion, is there any further questions on the side-by-side? All right, seeing none, Michelle, if we could go to the financial summary.
Mr. Chair, I surrendered my sheet for copying, and it looks like it's about to circulate. So
sure
we might
you don't have this in memory?
Sir, I do have it.
I know you. We will hand that out and we'll get you a copy.
We might want to give members a moment, too, to just take a look at it. Mr. Chair and members,
Michelle.
You have a three-page pass-out. The first page is the spreadsheet. The second page is a review of the 0.15% Hennepin County tax. That is a revenue estimate from the Department of Revenue. And the third page is a 0.5% sales tax in use for the 7-county metro region. That is also a revenue estimate from the Department of Revenue. What I will do, you have on the very first sheet, you have two boxes. The first is labeled House File 2480-5E as passed by the House. That's the House version. The second box is House File 2480-2UE as passed by the Senate. Senate staff will go over the Senate box at the bottom. I will go over the top box, and then there is also a little discussion that we'll have on another sheet, which I'm not sure is copied at this time. If I might, the first box, House File 5ES passed by the House, you can see columns A, B, C through column G. We have the Twins Stadium cost at $390 million, with on-site infrastructure at $90 million, totaling $522 million if you take into account the county debt financing. So it's column B, column C, column D. Those are the project costs that are in the bill, and you can find them on R16. Actually, ballpark costs in R16 total $260 million, and that is the cost of $390 million that you see for the stadium minus the proposed team contribution in column E. So $390 minus $130 equals the $260 that's in, on page R16. To the right, the other three columns describe who pays. The proposed team contribution is $130 million, which is approximately 25% of the project share. State contribution, actually, proposed public contribution, that's the $390 and the county financing of $42 million, totaling $392 million, reflecting approximately 75% of the total cost of $522 million. Now, the House proposal supports the payments of the stadium and the on-site infrastructure for the Twins with a 0.15% countywide sales tax in Hennepin County. The tax-exempt revenue bonds will are anticipated to be at a rate of almost 5%, 4.98, over 30 years. And infrastructure is included in that payment. Right. And the actually, as Ms. Templin reminds me, the local tax will terminate once the stadium is paid for. So the bonds will cease, or the tax will stop after the bonds have been paid for. Footnote number two includes sales tax exemptions for the construction materials that totals, this is an estimate that will occur over 4 years beginning in fiscal 07. And this is received from the Department of Revenue at $14 million. The third fiscal note highlights the two provisions that were added in to the tax, to the bill through amendment in the tax committee. The first is the high school lead league games and events. That provision has a cost of approximately $530,000 starting in 07. And then the overall local government construction sales tax exemption, and we talked about that a little bit before, is $87 million beginning in fiscal year 2010. And the last section identifies the entertainment, 3% entertainment tax that would apply to admissions fees for the ballpark as what was discussed in Ways and Means Committee.
Up on that, is it about $3 million a year that would go to the city of Minneapolis?
Yes, that's what was testified to in committee, and we verified those numbers. We actually anticipated a little bit less, approximately $2.9 million. Okay. And there's one thing that is not noted in a fiscal note. We just wanted to identify, and we can update this as we progress in committee. There is a property tax exemption in the House bill that will begin in 2013. And the estimated, once the property taxes are shifted amongst the group that of payers, property tax rebates are anticipated to be approximately $490,000 per year.
Senator Rosen.
Could you have a recap on that again, and where is that in the bill?
The property tax portion, the exemption, Ms. Schill, to that point.
I might ask Ms. Lefevre. I didn't mark that one as we were going through the bill.
Okay. Ms. Lefevre.
Mr. Chairman, members, the property tax exemption is on page R4,
in the on the House side, and in Article 3, Section 11 on the Senate side.
Senator Rosen, you have a follow-up with that?
Sure.
Okay. Ms. Schill, does that conclude your portion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, unless there are questions.
Right. Members, do we have any questions for Ms. Schill on the House financial summary? All right, seeing none, we will go to the Senate summary.
Okay, Mr. Chair, members, picking up in the middle of the page for the twins, the first line there shows the, I'll talk first about column B. For the twins, it's $480 million for the cost of the stadium off and on site infrastructure costs. And then the Senate bill includes a retractable roof with an estimated cost of $125 million for a total project cost for the twin stadium of $605 million. When we look at column E and F, we see the distribution looking at the first row. The twins' contribution is $130 million with the public contribution of $475. However, the language in the bill when it comes to the cost of the roof indicates that the twins will pay 25% of the roof, which is $31.25 million. And leaving the remainder of that for the public contribution. So what that, the effect of that is to increase the twins' share and to reduce the public share. So we get a total twins' contribution of $161.25 million or 27%, and a total public contribution of $443.75 million or 73%. Some of the footnotes to keep in mind is that in the bill, when we talk about the public contribution, we talk about amounts not to exceed, and we have the figure in there of $475 for the twins and $510 for the Vikings, which equals $985 million, which you'll see in a subsequent spreadsheet I'm going to pass out. We do include in the Senate side, as was already discussed, and the revenue estimates are the same, the sales tax exemption for the twins at an estimated cost of $14 million over 4 years beginning in FY07. The cost of the roof I already discussed on footnote 3, where there is a proportional distribution, 25%, 75% for the twins versus the public. Those are it for the twins footnotes, I guess. And I'll pause before I go on with the Vikings if people have questions.
Any questions, members? You've done a great job explaining. There's no questions. Please continue.
Okay, I'll continue on then. Under the line, we start with the Vikings. The Vikings' costs of the stadium are articulated there with the stadium costs of $455 million, the cost of the retractable roof at $120 million, land, parking spaces, and on-site infrastructure, getting us to a total of $675 million. In addition, there are the off-site road improvement costs, which are usually listed separately in the materials that have been discussed, and that would add $115 million. Those are the improvements to 35W and to some of the local access roads. That brings us to a total cost of $790 million. Shifting over to column E, where we look at the distribution, the Vikings would pay $280 million, or 41%, of the base cost of the stadium project cost of the $375 million. And the public contribution would be $395 million, or 59%. However, when we add in the cost of the public road improvements with the increased cost of to the total project of $790 million, the public share becomes 65%. percent. So the public share increases, the Viking share decreases. I have a separate spreadsheet that provides more detail on the public transit portion and how that money is used. If you want to pass that down to the other page.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before we move on, I was wondering if could be explained why there isn't any debt financing costs that are built in, given the fact that not all of the funds for the stadium are going to be in hand when they're going to be needed for expenditure.
Ms. Van Bosch.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lanning, at this point, it would be up to the teams and the Sports Facilities Commission to negotiate agreements and to organize the timing. And we don't know exactly what's going to be happening there, so we have not included any public financing costs at this time.
Senator Kelly.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Lanning, the $42 million included significant upfront deposits required because of the long-term nature of the bonds. And so it was very clear in the team's estimate of how they arrived at that $42 million that if you sequence, if you look at, for example, the chart that Ms. Van Mosch was handing out, between the team contribution to the Twin Stadium and the annual cash flow from the half-cent metropolitan sales tax, that you complete the public contribution to a Twin Stadium within the construction time frame for the stadium. So there might be some adjustment from one year to the next in terms of when they are paying bills to contractors and so forth, but you don't have to have the upfront deposits that you have to have if you're securing a 30-year bond on this much money. So we estimated that you would save nearly all of that $42 million in upfront financing costs. Of course, neither of these, we don't have for the House file the 30-year distribution of interest costs. What the $42 million was just the upfront financing costs that were being capitalized as part of the project.
Mr. Lanning, did you follow up?
No, thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, I should also point out something I missed on the main spreadsheet related to the Vikings on footnote 5. There is a sales tax exemption for the construction materials for the Viking Stadium that are estimated right now by the Department of Revenue to be $20.6 million over 4 years, and that would start in fiscal year 09. And then I will explain with footnote 6 the more of the detail with the sales tax and how it will be split between transit and stadium construction. The sheet that you just handed out that's labeled 05% sales and use tax in the 7-county metro area, in column A, it shows the revenue estimates for that source of income. The first 3 years, FY07, 08, and 09, are from the Department of Revenue. However, the department does not make projections beyond the next biennium, so Senate fiscal analysis staff working with revenue and finance staff projected out these revenues based on population forecasts, a factor for inflation, and an economic growth factor. And I have a more detailed memo that talks about how we did that if anyone is interested in that level of detail. But on column A, you see what is projected to be the sales tax revenues in the 7-county metro area for the 05% increase going up until 2030. And we stopped at 2030 because the Met Council does not have population forecasts beyond that time. Then if you take out the half of that in the first number of years from from, and by the way, these are calendar year projections as opposed to fiscal year projections. If you take out that the portion that is going to the stadiums, the half in the first from fiscal year 07 to 13, or calendar year 07 to 13, you see the split there between the stadiums and the transit. This is purely a math function, whereas the bill talks about making sure that the costs of the stadiums are done being funded without being able to estimate how long some of that will actually take. This is purely a function of just totaling up the math until we get to the $985 million. And then it shows on column D the amount of the sales tax revenues that would be going to transit over that period of time, and that equals $7.4 billion. And I think that's everything, Mr. Chair, unless people have questions.
And
Senator Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, the I think that the because the timing of the sale of the Metrodome is unclear. It's footnoted, but we don't have the projected sales revenue in the total going to transit, even though the Senate bill provides that it would go to transit. So that $7 billion number would be larger by whatever the proceeds of the Metrodome sale were.
All right, members, any questions on the financial summaries?
I've got a question.
Representative Peterson.
At some point, could we get these into apples and apples? When I look at the Twins thing, and I'm a real estate guy, so I want to think in terms of so many dollars a square foot for the facility and so much for the land and the improvements. We don't have any of that in the Twins yet, and the Vikings have all kinds of breakout, and so I'm having trouble trying to compare the two just from my own idea of what these things are costing. We don't, the press will. So I'm just thinking, is there some point we could take them and do it by seat and by land cost and by parking cost, just to give us a ballpark? If I was doing a building, it'd be $225 a square foot for the building. I'd spend $6,000 for the parking stall. I'd have X number of dollars in infrastructure. Just so we at least know the number. And I'd be happy to work with staff if that would help others. I think you can come up with some general assumptions and fact into a number.
Yep. Good point, Representative Peterson. We will be we're going to be taking a short recess here in a little bit, and that will give staff some time to maybe look at that and see if we can get some numbers together. But then also I want representatives from the teams and the counties and the cities to be here so we can follow up members then with questions to them. It would be my hope that we would recess here shortly, and then we would come back at 11, and then we would be prepared then as members to ask questions. We have the info now. We see the comparisons of the two bills. Now we'll be able to talk to the teams and the counties and the cities to see what they have to offer as far as our questions and so on. So any further questions at this point, members? Seeing that, we will be in recess until 11 a.m. Call this conference committee back to order.
There's no order.
All right, members, my plan is to now get some clarifying questions out of the way with the teams, the counties, the cities, and then we will we'll see how long that takes, and then it would be my plan then to adjourn for the day. So with that, I know Representative Keller wanted to start it off. Representative Keller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I noticed that Mayor of Minneapolis, R.T. Rybeck, is in the audience, and if he would come forward, I think we have a couple questions.
Welcome, Mayor.
Thank you very much.
Representative Keller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Mayor, could you give us, now you know that we have a couple bills before us and need to figure out the differences here, can you give us kind of a general idea of where you are in terms of city support for Twins Ballpark?
Yes. Mr. Chair, Representative Kelleher, thank you very much for the opportunity to be here. I believe strongly that it is very important to pass the ballpark legislation in some form this time, and I'll stand with you on that. You have two good options in front of you. I have advocated the regional sales tax for a long time, and I think long-term that is the way to get this done. But the most important goal here is to pass something this year.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Kelleher,
Mayor, can you give us an idea of what you think actually gets the ballpark built here in the near future?
Well, I believe, Mr. Chair, I believe the House bill and the Senate bill both build a ballpark. The only part of this that I think is problematic, and frankly I think is deeply problematic, is the idea of a referendum.
Okay.
Representative Kelleher.
Mr. Chair, I think unless the mayor has something else or other members have something that I'd like to ask the mayor, I guess I will ask Mayor, can you just give us briefly kind of the benefits of the site, briefly?
Mr. Chair, tens of millions of dollars have been invested in this site by the City of Minneapolis and other areas so that the infrastructure is largely in place. Roads, bridges, parking, you do not have another opportunity like that. So unlike other areas that have had to put tens of millions of dollars into that infrastructure, it's already there. There will be a significant transportation infrastructure that will tie in the Mall of America and the areas in that direction with light rail. The North-South Corridor will come right to the front here. It's served by freeways. It's served by 10,000 parking spaces. All of that is infrastructure you do not have to do. You also have a very, very willing county and a very, very willing city, the largest city in the state, the largest county in the state, a county that represents one out of every four residents, standing by ready to go. And as mayor of the city, I commit we will do everything we can to get this done in partnership with the great leaders on the county board led by Mike Opec.
And, Mr. Chair, one other thing, Mr. Mayor, development potential around the site, could you speak to that at all in terms of what other private development may come with this sort of proposal?
Mayor, Representative Kelleher, this site is truly a remarkable site for the reasons I mentioned, and it will leverage not only a ballpark, but tremendous amount of office and housing. As many of you may have noticed, the area around this has seen a tremendous boom in new housing units. 30,000 people, 30,000 people now live in downtown Minneapolis. And the one site that remains open for significantly more housing development is right around this area, as well as office sites. So you have unprecedented transportation. You have a new entertainment infrastructure to add to the entertainment district, and it will lead, we believe, to some very significant growth that will benefit everyone in the state.
And
Representative Kelleher.
Mr. Chair, I will have for members of the conference committee shortly some a look at what the surrounding development may look like. Because I do think it's important to keep that in mind on this particular site, that there is some really exciting synergy that will happen around other development, and it really looks great. So thank you.
Senator Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Mayor, you may feel free to say that you'd like to have your staff address this now or later, but one of the differences that we were noting between the House and the Senate bills earlier was the degree of specificity regarding timelines and processes, sometimes within the city, but sometimes between the authority, the county, and the city. Could you address your sense of how specific or how prescriptive maybe you think we need to be in terms of the ensuring that Minneapolis moves both rapidly and successfully should the legislature authorize construction of a ballpark?
Mayor Ryback.
Mr. Chair, Senator Kelly, the contents of the bill as they stand make sense to us. I do have to say that frankly no one needs to light a fire under us. We want to get this done and break down every wall we can to get it done. We're deeply motivated to deliver this project, so as interested as you are, and or any member may be, in putting something in the bill to light a fire under us, I feel the heat in my backside and want this done very much. So we don't feel that it's necessary to move any further on that. We're very, very aggressive partners with you.
Representative Scora.
Just a quick follow-up, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Mayor Rybak, what do you think the Twins currently bring in the way of revenue and other qualities to the city and to the county, I suppose? And what do you think the difference would be with the new stadium?
Mr. Chair, Representative Scora, great question, because as a lifelong Twins fan and as somebody who obviously loves downtown Minneapolis, the Twins bring a great deal there. But there's something very different about what this ballpark will do and what the Metrodome has done. I think the experience with ballparks show that a ballpark in a vacuum, in and of itself, does not generate that much development. You can be jam-packed and overflowing on game days, and then you're not full at all later. So you don't see a ballpark put in an isolated place as generating a great deal of economic development. However, when you put a ballpark within an entertainment context, where there are already businesses there, you can have a catalytic effect. Denver is the classic example. People often mistakenly say that Denver's lower town district boomed after the ballpark was there. That's not the case. There was an entertainment district, but when they put a ballpark there, it exploded in a very positive way. That's the same thing that we believe will happen here. There's a very, very strong entertainment district downtown. But the area where the dome is right now is vacant and underutilized. So I believe you will see something very different. The Metrodome is not surrounded with entertainment uses, and there's a reason for that. The new ballpark will be surrounded dramatically with dramatically increased opportunities, especially with the transportation infrastructure, the likes of which I don't think, frankly, we've ever seen in this state.
Thank you.
Representative Scora?
I just one follow-up. I have two daughters who live in Colorado with their families, and they love the ballpark in Denver. I mean, they do attend it, and they love it, and they wonder why we haven't done something like this. So,
Representative Peterson.
I'm back.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, Mayor, you talked about how the Metrodome was kind of over there all by itself, but when I remember when the Target Center was built, and that whole warehouse district area there was warehouses. And since the Target Center came, that's just blossomed and bloomed, and maybe you could talk about the effect that sports facility has had. And it's only, what, two blocks from where the new ballpark would be.
Yes. Mayor. Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, I think you read the situation well, that when Target Center came into a small entertainment district where the Loon was kind of an edgy place to go,
yes.
It had a dramatically significant impact on that during the winter when the Timberwolves were playing or when there was a concert at Target Center. Now what you will have is you will have a year-round two facilities feeding into the entertainment infrastructure. And what that does is not only give life to entertainment, but it creates more of a 24-hour experience, which, of course, feeds more housing, which, of course, helps us more with getting housing along transit corridors, which, of course, helps us address congestion in a comprehensive way. So I don't mean to paint too beautiful of a picture on it, but this is a pretty darn good thing we're looking at. Mm-hmm.
Senator Markle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Mayor, I know of your enthusiasm for the stadium, for the good of the city of Minneapolis and beyond, and for Hennepin County. But I feel the weight of my position on this particular conference committee, because I think I'm the only person from the east side. And a lot of the folks that I represent, the people around the east side, even beyond my district, they're concerned about getting to the ballpark. And you mentioned earlier about the transportation infrastructure being second to none. And I would like to hear a little bit more about your commitment to try to work with us to make certain that the folks on the east side have as easy access to that ballpark as the folks from Hennepin County and Anoka County do.
Yes. Mayor. Mr. Chair and Senator, thank you for the softball, because you and I know both are strong proponents of regional transportation systems. Right now, what we'll be able to do if the North Star passes, as we hope, is that a kid from Ramsey will be able to hop on a train and get to this spot. A kid from Bloomington can hop on light rail. A kid from Minnetonka can hop on a bike. I also want a kid from St. Paul to ride the Central Corridor, and I'd like someone from your district to hop in, would it be Red Rocks, and come right to that site. This is the best chance we have to do that because much of that transportation infrastructure is in place. As someone who is obviously a strong proponent of the Central Corridor as the East Metro Link, I think that's the best way to do that. But I'll also say that that no matter where we put this, we have to think about transportation infrastructure and balance in the region. I thank you for your leadership on that.
Senator Rosen?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Good to see you.
Could you explain in your version why a referendum would be problematic, as you said?
Yes. Mr. Chair, first and foremost, if there is a referendum, there won't be a ballpark, because the great leaders in Hennepin County who have taken clean stands on this will not be able to support that, and so we will lose Hennepin County's support. So first and foremost, that will be a problem. Second, frankly, I just went for a referendum. It's called an election. And in that election, I went before people and said, you may or may not like this, but I'm going to come over to the Capitol and do what I'm doing right now, testify in favor of this. And I went to people's front doors and represented that and did what we do in a democracy. You, frankly, also are about to go out for your own referendum. And by the way, I think you'll be greeted by people who feel much more positively about ballparks than they used to. But the fact of the matter is, the Twins in Hennepin County won't build this if there's a referendum. And that would mean there will be no ballpark. And I care deeply about getting a ballpark finished now. I think we all, Mr. Chair, have to recognize that people have dealt with this issue and all of its different ramifications for many years, and they can now take the fact that we're close to getting this done. If it doesn't get done now, the narrow majorities that have gotten this through in different places may not hold. The citizens, I think, will be impatient, and I think the worst referendum we could face would be one of people saying we did nothing.
Members, any further questions for the mayor? Seeing none, Mayor, I want to thank you and your staff for all the help, encouragement, and work that you've done on the House bill through the process. I see some of your folks behind you, and they know who they are, but I want to thank you very much for your help and not only helping us get it through the process, but the work that we did in the House in such a bipartisan effort was because of the fact that you and your staff worked very hard to make that happen. So thank you.
Well, Mr. Chair, as long as those people behind me don't have a hook, I will very quickly say I just want to thank you and Senator Kelly and all the members for wrestling with what has been a very tough issue for many years. And I know there's no easy out on this, but we are as close to ever getting this done as we have ever been. And I just encourage you and all the tough work you're going to have in the coming days not to blink. This is the chance that people have been waiting for to do something big, and I think we're close. I deeply applaud the leadership of Hennepin County and Mike Opat on this. And please wrestle with these tough issues, but don't come away without winning this game we're about to win.
Thank you, Mayor. Very much. Members, any further questions for anybody that's here in the audience? Ms. Squire?
I would like to ask the Twins a couple of questions.
Mr. Bell, could you come forward, please? Before we get Noel Herbeck today?
Chairman, he bats cleanup.
Representative Sikora.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and either one of you that wishes to answer this question. I'm just curious because there's a lot of talk about roofs and whether or not we should have a roof on the stadium or whether it should be built to accommodate a roof in the future. I have a lot of rural relatives who, of course, would like to see a roof because they don't want to drive all the way down and then find out that it's raining. So I'm kind of curious. The Senate plan calls for a roof. The House does not. And since it wasn't part of your original agreement, did you just not prefer a roof? Did you not wish to spend the dollars? Was it inconvenient to add a roof? You know, can you just give us a little understanding of that?
Mr. Bell.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, Representative Starr, the Twins for a long time have wanted a roof, and this is probably not the best day for me to say we can get along without a roof. The fact of the matter is we would love to have a roof. We would also like to have Derek Jeter and Alex Rodriguez, but we can't afford it. when we negotiated our agreement with Hennepin County and Mike Opat, we had a lot of discussion about that. The Twins' position was we can't do this without a roof. And the county's position was we can only afford so much. And so we went back and had a very serious and intense discussion internally and determined that while, of course, we want a roof, particularly for the people in outstate Minnesota, and the fact that we have now a generation of people who have never experienced the rain out in the ball game because it's over 20 years, bottom line was we're better off in an outdoor ballpark than we are in the Metrodome, even without a roof. This is the art of the possible. We know from back with the governor's steering committee, that the desire has always been for a roof, but we also know that there won't be any state money in our funding plan. Without state money in the plan, we have to then concentrate on what can the county and the Twins do jointly, and this is what we can do jointly. This is possible to do, and so this is what we're proposing.
Mr. Bell, I'll follow up with that. If you could comment, please, to the committee about some of the things that have been done architecturally in your plan to potentially, you know, if there is rain, the drainage you talked about on the field and committee, the larger concourse areas. If you could comment that on that a little bit. Senator Higgins talked about the heated seats or the potential on that. I tend to believe as Minnesotans we're pretty tough. We just don't give ourselves enough credit. If we, you commented on this, Mr. Bell, in committee, that if we were to live our lives in the fear of a weatherman, I don't think we would have our corn planted, our soybeans planted. We wouldn't go for walks with our kids, so on and so forth. So if you could comment on that a little bit. I think you described it well in committee, and I think it would be good for the conference committee to hear.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, the ballpark design changed once we shifted from a roof to no roof. A sunscreen has been added. The features that Senator Higgins talked about are will be built. Our view is maybe we would have on average about 6 rainouts a year, maybe. You know, in some ways that's a good thing for fans because then you schedule doubleheaders to make up the games and people like doubleheaders a lot. So the bigger concern that we have, frankly, is the cold weather. The roof that was proposed over the years didn't include any heat, although if the roof is enclosed, you do get some body heat, and it helps keep it warmer in there. But that was never a feature of a roof for a ballpark, nor was air conditioning. It was simply to protect you against rainouts for the most part. We do plan to utilize to the fullest extent possible the energy from the HERC facility. We've included in as many places as possible areas in the ballpark that will be heated, for instance, the concourse, the club seating, the restrooms, concession stands, all of those areas will be heated. We only have 12,000 seats in the upper deck, which is, by the way, I think the fewest of any ballpark that would be built in the country or that has been built in the country. And part of those would be sheltered by the sunscreen. So we think that we have taken great strides to protect people as much as possible. They will be able to step back on a cold day and warm up for a bit before they go down. I should also point out that a few years ago I went to a World Series game in Cleveland, which is a similar kind of ballpark. It was 45 degrees, played at night, place was sold out, everybody had fun. There were no empty seats.
Mr. Bell, if the Twins are playing in the fall and it's cold and you're in the playoffs, I think you'll sell it out.
I think so, too.
Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, I want you to be candid on this question. The two bills have two different organizational structures. Now, at present time, you're a tenant in with the Metropolitan Sports Commission. This new bill calls for the MBA, Metro Ballpark Authority. Can you give us some reaction to those structures, how it would impact you, how you see it happening?
Yes.
Mr. Bell.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Peterson, the Metrodome is unique in one one area particularly. It's the only ballpark or facility in the country that is not operated by the team, at least in baseball. Every other ballpark in the country is operated by the team, and there's very good reason for that. You know, we are the organization that puts on the game. In order to do that, we need to have game presentation that we have total control over. That includes concessions, cleaning, marketing, how we utilize the scoreboard, when do you put advertising on the scoreboard, when do you not put advertising on the scoreboard. I mean, it's just the whole game experience needs to be under the control of the team in order for us to take responsibility for everything. And we're willing to pay all of the operating expenses for that. So the Metrodome, because it's a different structure, has three teams in there, it needs to be operated the way it is. But that's not the most efficient way to do things. And I think every other city that has Major League Baseball in the country has recognized that because no one else does it. I'm not sure that answered all your questions, but it's not just... Okay.
Sam Peterson, here.
No follow-up.
Okay. Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Bell, you heard the discussion earlier about the LEED certification, and I wonder if you could comment on what your plan at this point includes by way of sort of green design.
Yes.
If you have what you've incorporated so far, what you're willing to consider as far as this goal of a LEED certification.
Mr. Bell.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lanning, until we had a hearing at Senator Higgins' committee, I never heard of the word LEED, sir. I guess it's an acronym, not a word. But, of course, we tried to learn quick here. We discussed it with our architect. We discussed it with the consultant that we have, Mark Andrew, who will answer more questions if you'd like in more detail. We were already planning to do a number of things that would be helpful in getting LEED certification, and Senator Higgins outlined them very well. Utilize existing air conditioning facilities because the parts naturally on a part of the ballpark will be air conditioned. The heat, the garbage burning, reuse of rainwater to water the grass. We will have grass and heat the field. I think what we would like to do is, since we live in this climate, and borrowing on include something that has been included in the Denver facility. In Denver, they have a heating coil system underneath the turf so that in March, they turn it on, they run warm water through that. It heats up the grass a little faster, the grass gets green quicker. We would like to do the same thing. All of that is possible because of the energy center. So that's fine. That's what we want to do. We will do that. The concern we have is certification. We asked our architect about that, who was familiar with it, of course. He said it could cost up to $20 million extra to do that, to get the certification, not to do what we plan to do, but to get the certification. That scared us because that's not in the budget. We found out this is the same architect who is designing and building the ballpark in Washington, D.C. They looked into it as well and decided not to seek the certification. Senator Higgins said there are grants available. I think if there was language in the bill that said subject to the grants, we would try to get the certification, that would be okay, because the grants then could replace what is not in the budget. Otherwise, obviously we have some concerns with the certification. Not doing those things, we want to do those things, but the certification.
Senator Higgins.
And Mr. Bell, could you talk a little bit about the marketing and branding kind of opportunities, or maybe Mr. Andrew, consultant, could help with that? That would be that would be there for the team as the first green ballpark in the country.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Higgins, I think I would like to ask Mr. Andrew to talk a little bit more. He has researched that for us. He said I'm not an expert on that.
Mr. Andrew, welcome.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Mark Andrew, I do consulting for the Minnesota Twins and have for the past 6 years on a wide variety of issues. And because of the baseball team's strong interest in environmental amenities, have also provided some staff support to them to provide information with respect to possible environmental qualities for the ballpark.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Andrews, could you talk to us about the marketing and branding kind of opportunities that would be available for the Twins because of being the first green ballpark?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Higgins, because there's never been a certified green sports facility, everything is theoretical.
Right.
Still, so I better make that point. But the Minnesota Twins are very enterprising. They have very imaginative marketing people. Their history has been to be successful at marketing because we're a small market team, and the Twins have had to figure out a way to wring every possible dollar benefit out of a baseball team that has a disadvantage against the rest of the market. But we do feel there are some possibilities there that are being looked into, and they would apply probably to corporate sponsorship relationships. And again, until there is a ballpark bill and until we know how far the environmental piece is going to go, it's going to be pretty hard to determine how successful that could be.
Senator Higgins?
Mr. Chair and Mr. Andrew, I think I misspoke when Representative Lanning first asked about what level of certification we had suggested in this bill. Could you give a better answer than what I gave?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I don't know. I didn't hear the comment.
Okay. I thought it was the lowest level of certification.
Okay. There are four levels of LEED certification. There is certified, there is silver, there is gold, and then finally there is platinum. And the vast majority of LEED certified projects around the country have been silver or gold certified. There have been very few platinum certified facilities. There might be a possibility, given what Mr. Bell has testified to, given that the HERC is an alternative energy facility. I think that needs to be made really clear to members. The HERC generates alternative energy, and that does open up opportunities for it's one of the most important things in LEED, and would certainly help to, even if it's not fully certified, would certainly be an important element in the ballpark.
And
Senator
Mr.
Higgins.
Chair, I think the transportation and transit availability would also be another piece that would be important in that certification. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Andrews. All right. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have two questions, and the first one I would like to direct to Mr. Andrews. Good morning. You say it's a green stadium, and nobody, I don't think, has talked about the cost savings to being a green stadium, and if there's figures out there that we can, we're just talking about how much it's going to cost and whether we can get grants, but in the long term, are there savings?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rosen, again, a sports facility has never been certified. So, again, I want to emphasize it's all theoretical right now. But when LEED was first established under the U.S. Green Building Council in around 1991, there were about 100 LEED projects in the first 10 years of that program. It's very limited, almost all government buildings and large nonprofit buildings. From 2001 to about 2005, there have been 500 to 600 LEED certified projects, and since 2005, there are now 4,500 projects in the pipeline. And the research suggests that when LEED first started, the incremental cost increases for design and construction could go all the way to 5%. And maybe as high as 7% in some commercial buildings. What has happened in recent years is that the incremental cost of implementing environmental features into buildings has dropped steadily, so that now the commonly used figure is about 2% incremental cost increase as a result of those features.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Bell? I'm not sure if anybody's from Denver, but I was born and raised there and have spent many afternoons and evenings at Coors Field. Have we talked about a corporate sponsorship for this stadium at all?
Mr. Bell.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rosen, we have retained in both bills the the opportunity to have naming rights. Exactly how that's implemented with the Polad family remains to be seen. They may have other ideas.
Senator Rosen?
Mr. Chair, did you have microbreweries too at that stage?
No.
Members, any further questions? Representative Keller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Andrew, I think that part of Senator Rosen's question was also about operating costs ongoing and lower operating costs for those buildings that incorporate green features. I want to just bookmark here. I think the Twins have done a great job on this issue and come a long way in the 8 years I've been in the legislature and voting on stadium bills, which the best stadium bill will be the one that actually gets it built. So can I say that? Since I've had the pleasure of voting on a couple of others that have not gotten a stadium built. I do think I would like at some point, and not right now, to hear from the Vikings on their plans, because although not LEED certified, the new Foxborough Stadium that the Kraft brothers built for the New England Patriots has many green features to it. They did that on their own dime, and one of the reasons they did it on their own dime was very much that issue of ongoing operating costs, to be able to reduce those ongoing operating costs. In terms of gray water recycling, making sure that they were environmentally sensitive about the site and what they were doing there. So I know that we've heard some from the Twins, and I think you've done a very good job at moving this along, and I think we want to work to make sure that it works going forward. But I also do, at some point when we get to hear from the Vikings on their proposal, hear about their plans for this, because I do think part of being a Minnesotan is being sensitive to the environment we live in, whether it's urban or rural, and making sure that we're taking good care of those resources.
And Mr. Chair?
Senator Higgins.
And Mr. Chair, I want to thank Mr. Bell too for being willing to keep working on this and having Mr. Andrew, go through the process of trying to figure out the grants and figure out more about the certification and what kinds of things can make this ballpark really spectacular. In terms of being sustainable and being a facility that in the long run can cost you less because of the good environmental work that we're doing together on getting this ballpark done.
Thank you.
Members, any further questions? Senator Kelly.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Bell, consistent with the point that Mr. Andrew made about the variations in estimates of the upfront costs, the $20 million number looks like roughly 5% of the cost of constructing the ballpark. And if the number is for this project closer to 2%, I hope there'll be an ongoing evaluation of that number by your architects, along with the ideas regarding the grants and so forth. But my question to you is, so that the members of the conference committee can think about it over the weekend, not at a word-for-word level, but at a general provision level, would you identify the provisions in each of the bills that the Twins are most concerned about?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kelly, LEEDS is not on the top of our list. We are very concerned about a referendum. I think Mayor Rybak did a terrific job in outlining the problems with that. Our view is, after 10 years, we're really looking for certainty. Are we going to build this, or are we not going to build this? We've already experienced a $30 million increase in the cost from last year to this year because it wasn't voted on last year. That's a huge problem. The county and the Twins agreement does not include a referendum. Either one of us have, both of us have veto power over that. They, we think alike on that. So that's a major concern for us. Secondly, the 18%, and I testified to this someplace, that no good deed goes unpunished. We offered that 18% with you, Senator Kelly. As you recall, I think we worked on that in your office. It was 15% at the time, and maybe I should give members a little background on that. As we went through this process in the legislature, there was quite a bit of
discussion as to whether or not Mr. Pollad could get this ballpark approved and then turn around and sell it immediately and get a big profit, which is probably true. So in order to guard against that, the theory was, well, a portion of that potential profit would be paid back to the public entity that's helping pay for the ballpark. We, of course, said we would do that, and then we started to figure out what the net would be, what the net profit would be, and obviously we've got to take off our expenses, the $130 million required from this. We'd want to subtract that. We'd want to subtract what the team is, what Ms. Poe has already invested in the team, including losses. And Senator Kelly said that gets complicated, and that gets into an argument, whose accountant is right and whose accountant is wrong, and so we should work off the gross. Obviously, that makes it simple. So we said, okay, we'll do that. But the effect of the ballpark on the value of the team as time goes on diminishes. So what we agreed to was 15% declining by 1.5% a year for 10 years. The county, when we negotiated with them, extracted a little more and said we want 18% declining by 1.8% over 10 years. So that's the background on that. 18% over the life of the agreement is a very, very serious problem. It's like giving away 20% of the team, but we pay all the costs, and we, if there are losses, we, during the time we pay the losses, that's a serious problem for us. I think, there's some other issues. Those three are the biggest ones. There's some misunderstanding. From our point of view at least, there's some misunderstanding in the House bill about the cap on the $90 million. Mr. Strangis maybe can explain that a little better. He's dealt with that. Ralph?
Strangis. Ralph Strangis, an attorney for the Twins. Mr. Chairman, members, with respect to that matter, when the $90 million cap was put in, I believe it was intended to deal with basically land, site improvements, and infrastructure. However, the way the House bill is worded, it also includes other amounts expended by the county pursuant to the Act, and that would then pick up the county's obligation for participating in the funding of the Capital Improvement Reserve, which is $1 million a year, as is the team's. It would also include the county's obligation with respect to funding the ballpark authority and whatever other matters might be required of the county to fulfill its obligations under the bill. So I think that language was inadvertently included. I think the intention was simply that that $90 million cap would apply to that category of items that the county had included in its $90 million estimate as testified to in this committee. It was basically land, site improvements, and infrastructure. So that was another one in the bill. I'm going to cover these up.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, there's a couple of others. There's a provision in the House bill with regard to Major League Baseball guarantee. Major League Baseball has never granted a guarantee. I have discussed this after the provision was attached with the league's attorney. And some people may recall that the American League did grant a form of guarantee when the Metrodome was built, but that was the American League. The American League is no longer an operating entity. It's, we have leagues for National League and American League, but as operating entities, that was changed a couple of years ago, and now Major League Baseball does all of the operation from that office, and it was subject to the Major League Constitution. That Constitution would mean, it would mean that every owner in baseball would be a party to this, and Mr. Chairman, I'm afraid they will not agree to that. So that's a huge problem for us. Another provision is, I think in both bills, is community ownership. Our owners are not opposed to some form of community ownership. We've discussed that and have testified to that in the past. The problem is, in the House bill, it's subject to Major League Baseball approval. That's okay because you cannot sell a team without the approval of Major League Baseball. I think the Senate version does not make it subject to Major League Baseball approval, so that's an issue with the two that, that we might want to reconcile. What else do we have?
Mr. Chairman, members, there are a couple of other things that we want to make sure the bill works not only for the Twins but for Hennepin County because of the partnership. so that what we want to be sure in the bill, there is adequate provision. I think the county may want to speak to these more directly or in more detail, for the county to be able to acquire the land that is necessary. I know there's changes in the eminent domain statutes that are currently pending before the legislature, but we want to make certain that the county has the capacity and the ability to acquire the land. We also want to be sure that the tax provisions, and I'm not a specialist in this, this is really more for the county, but the imposition of the tax and doing it in a way that bond counsel and the insurance company and the rating agencies will acknowledge assures the stream of revenue necessary to support the bonds. We need to be sure that that works in the bill. We want to be certain that the you heard the Mayor Rybak testify with respect to his view of the process as it relates to the city and the county. But I think we want to be certain that the mechanics in the bill, and I know there have been amendments introduced previously, really work quite smoothly because the city council also has a significant involvement in the process, and this is a complicated project where keeping it on time is extremely important to being able to maintain the budget. And then, of course, if you move over to some of the other provisions, anything that changes the budget, whether it's $31 million for the cost of the roof, or whether it's a delay, the roof would initially potentially delay 6 months or more. If that cost you another year, we know the last year cost us $30 million. Those are sort of principal areas of concern that we want to be sure that as these two bills, and the bill commented that the community ownership provisions, which are the right of first refusal one place and community ownership in another place, and the two bills don't mesh together. There may be better ways to do this. We also would not like to create a circumstance where it sounds like there's something in the bill, but recognizing Major League Baseball's rules really doesn't have kind of any real significant effect. So we think that needs some further study and to be addressed.
Mr. Strandis, you talked sorry to jump in here. You talked about the timeline quick. I just want to ask the simple question of the timeline. With all the other issues that you've discussed needing to be addressed, the simple question would be this. Does the timeline of the House bill work better than the timeline of the Senate bill, or vice versa?
Mr. Chairman, I'll answer that. Yes, the timeline of the House bill works better than the Senate. Yes.
Does the timeline of the Senate bill get a ballpark built?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think so.
Thank you. Senator Rosen?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure if this is the appropriate time to ask this question or not, but Mr. Bell and Mr. Finn just brought up a very good point about the timing and moving smoothly. And I'm just thinking of CCA and all the environmental impact studies and the EAWs, the EIS that have to be done. Is this going to be a problem? We've already done this, and I don't know anything about it. So a little better understanding, please.
Mr. Bell.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rosen, the House bill calls for the Twins to put in the first $45 million. Your question is a good question. We will put some of that money at risk, and we will begin the environmental impact statement immediately. At the same time, the county has to go through a series of public hearings and a process before they can sell bonds. So we're not going to wait for them to go through that process. If that process ends in failure, we just are out what we paid up front to do that. But we think it's worth it to move as quickly as possible. In addition to that, at the same time, I mean, we need to do more detailed design specifications for the ballpark. We will also pay for that so that process can begin. And once again, if the bonds are not sold, that's just our risk and it's too bad. We pay for that. So to answer your question more directly, I think we've taken those potential delays into account and dealt with them in that fashion.
Senator Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Bell, you mentioned the roof. I think you've probably said this in other places, but I think it's important to maybe summarize it. My sense is that it's now or never for purposes of purchasing a roof for the ballpark. Would you address that issue?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kelly, I think that's probably accurate. We have said that this is not necessarily a roof-ready ballpark. Others will argue if it's there, it's roof ready. Someplace down the road with enough money, you can do it. That's not what we're selling here. We don't want to confuse anybody. Our view is if this bill is passed in the House form, that we will build the ballpark. It'll be a great ballpark. We will not have a roof.
And
Senator Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Bell, if we do use an alternative financing mechanism under which we could afford to build a roof, I take it that that would be fine from the point of view of the Twins, and I did hear Mr. Strangis sort of obliquely refer to the team participation that's in the Senate bill. Maybe you could address that.
Yes.
Mr. Bell.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kelly, the Senate bill does require us to pay approximately $31 million more for a roof, and I'm 99% sure we would not do that. Moreover, it adds 6 months, or I think 6 months is a year, because by the time you get through the election and start the process, instead of moving into a new ballpark in 2010, it would be 2011, so we would have a year. We analyze that a little different than other people do. We consider that a year's lost revenue and another year of expense. That probably gets us closer to $70 or $80 million of additional cost. 31 for the roof, 30 for the year's delay, plus lost revenue. Mr. Chairman, Senator Kelly, we're really not prepared to do that.
Well, and Senator Kelly.
And Mr. Chairman, Mr. Bell, suppose in the conference committee process, assuming passage of an alternative financing mechanism, the public picked up the cost of the roof. Is the delay that you're talking about an effect of planning for and organizing the construction to include the roof the key issue, and you're talking about the cost of delay?
Mr. Bell.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kelly, I've calculated in the cost of delay two elements. One is the referendum that's in the Senate bill, and the second one is our advice from our construction management people is that it will take extra time. Now, you know, we don't know for sure how much. If a bill emerged from the conference committee that didn't require an additional contribution from the team, you may have a little different view of it.
Senator Kelly? Mr. Bell, on that point, the Senate version calls for a roof that had $125 million. And maybe I can ask Senator Kelly, where did that number come from? Is that a quote from an architect, from a builder,
Well, Mr. Chairman, a lot of these numbers are given in round numbers rather than in quotes. But Mr. Chairman, you might note that the $120 million is the estimate for a retractable roof on the Vikings stadium. So my understanding is that whether we got the number from the Twins or we're working on the estimate for the Viking, that there is a certain round number which is currently estimated as applicable to the construction of a retractable roof.
Mr. Kelly, the rounding is our fault. I think the architect said it would be $123,450,000. No, seriously. we did round it off at $125,000 because that's very close to what the estimate was, not only from the architect, but also from the construction people. One of the issues, you know, in some ways we'd like to do this, but one of the issues in putting a roof on in that location involves the staging area. And I'm not an expert on this, but they build the roof and then they have to lift it up and put it on. It has to do with the sequence of construction. I remember when they built the Metrodome, actually built the upper deck first and then dug out the bowl because it was cheaper to put things on top from that level as opposed to, you know, the cranes didn't have to be as high and so on. And you probably employ those same kind of condition or same kind of construction elements here. But that came from both the architect and the construction manager in our case.
So on a further note on that on that point. In committee, wasn't it testified, didn't someone testify on the fact that there'd have to be a couple of buildings then demolished to make that work, and that would add the additional development cost?
Mr. Chairman, that was if you were going to add a roof at a later date. The construction manager said, now you got the ballpark here, now there's no open staging area because it's completed. If you tore down a couple of buildings, I think the environmental science building that the county owns is near there. It's on the other side of the railroad tracks. And then they would then use that as a staging area, and it would probably be over a two-year period. But this would be after the fact, not during.
So if it was included in the original proposal, there wouldn't be more space needed than what is in the current proposal?
No, Mr. Chairman, no.
Okay. Members, any further questions?
Yes.
Representative Laney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Bell, wondering if you could supply us with some more particulars about the problems you see with this $90 million infrastructure provision that's in the House bill. I was trying to follow that and found it difficult to follow just what all the particular problems might be, and I think it would be helpful if you gave us some more particulars about that.
Mr. Bell.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lanning, it's not the $90 million cap that was the biggest problem, it was the definitions, and Mr. Strangis will provide that.
Thank you.
All right, so no further questions. Mr. Bell, final comment. This will be a very high-level question for you. You can answer it how you will, but we've debated this for 10 to 12 years. In your mind, how have we got to where we are today? Why has this not passed in the past? And why can it pass today?
Mr. Chairman, I'll try to sum up 10 years of testimony. I think in the past, the climate was simply not ready to build a ballpark. First, the Metrodome wasn't that old 10 years ago. It's still not all that old, to be honest. It just isn't the facility that everybody hoped it would be. Now, since I was involved in building the Metrodome, and I'm willing to say that I am very proud of the work that I did on that, and everyone who was connected with it should be proud. The Metrodome has served us very well. We've had two World Series there. We've had the Final Four there twice. We've had a Super Bowl there. We have had millions of people attend events at the Metrodome and thoroughly enjoyed it, and many millions more watching them on TV. It did its job. It's paid for, but it's time to be replaced. Things have changed. Also, in the time that we have been here, 19 new ballparks have built. We have to compete with every single one of those teams, and the revenues that they produce from those new ballparks. And frankly, the fan experience. I mean, you go to Cleveland, look how many fans from the Twins travel to other stadiums for the outdoor baseball experience. They have to do that because we don't have the same thing to offer here and we can't in the Metrodome. I think the Twins have made mistakes in that process as well. We admit that. It's a long time to overcome some mistakes when you make them. I think the environment is better than it was on both sides now. So I don't know if that fully answers your question, Mr. Chairman. It seems to me there was more to it than that. But also, the involvement of state money has been a big issue along the way. The argument has been, well, if we spend state money on a ballpark, then we're taking potential dollars away from education, from health care, from all kinds of other issues that the state must deal with from their budget. This plan is the first plan that doesn't do that. It follows the guidelines of the governor's screening committee in that regard, which also, by the way, I might add, put in a plug here, that screening committee said no referendum as well. So I think the bill is better. I think the time is better. I think Major League Baseball as an organization is better. We do have revenue sharing now. We have more competitive teams. In the last 5 or 6 years, different teams have won the World Series each year. So just overall, it's taken longer than it should have probably, but it's much better.
Thank you. Senator Marco.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Bell, actually more to Mr. Chair. Mr. Bell just said that the dome isn't the facility that everyone hoped it would be. And I would argue that's one reason why the Senate position of having a roof is something that we should address now. Because the reality is we don't want to be looking out 20 years later and saying, this isn't the facility that we hoped it would be. I don't want to see ourselves go through this again. I don't want to see future legislatures going through another 10-year stadium war. It's a very uncomfortable position to be in. Yes, it's our job, but it's also it's very difficult to find answers. I've heard your bill described as nice, simple, easy bill. There's nothing simple about building a stadium. And I would argue that neither of these bills provides a stadium without a tax increase. So I think we need to acknowledge that full face, that this is a tax increase. Whether it's your bill or Senator Kelly's bill, we're talking about a tax increase.
All right. Any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Bell. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members.
Any other committee questions for anybody that might be in the audience here? Oh, would someone from Hennepin County be here? There's a... Commissioner Opat.
Commissioner Opat.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman.
Good afternoon, Commissioner. Senator Kelly?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner... would you answer the question I asked Mr. Bell, from a high-level point of view, provisions of the two bills that are of concern to Hennepin County that you would like the conference committee to address?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kelly, if I can take the... I'm more familiar with the House bill for reasons that we have more of a role there, so let me go with that. I think Mr. Strandis, Mr. Bell addressed most of them. I think what I would touch on is around the infrastructure part of it and the cap that was debated for the end of the Ways and Means Committee hearing, and the cap was added there. There's a lot going on in this site, and we've been, as we made the decision to, together with the twins, propose a solution that had some specifics. We've been in a struggle with how many specifics can we provide without authority to actually do this work. So we've tried to make some estimates, understanding that the site is privately held. We want to negotiate with the owner. We don't know what's under the asphalt. We don't have an EIS yet. We need to know that. Negotiate with the owner. We don't know what's under the asphalt. We don't have an EIS yet. We need to know that. So we tried to provide some latitude with regard to infrastructure. Having finance costs come out of the $90 million, having commitments for ballpark authority and capital probably come out of the $90 million, that leaves us less flexibility. So we are concerned about that. I think we'd like to have that cap removed, more in the spirit of how we intended it to be, $90 million on infrastructure, streetscape, things like that, and not include the other ancillary costs. Originally, we had proposed in both bills some uses for excess revenues that might not be needed to retire the debt as the tax revenues grew over time. And that would be library hours and youth sports activities, to try to have a little more broad approach. And I think, in deference to my colleague, Commissioner McLaughlin, who entered into this debate very adamant about that, I want to make sure I make that clear here, because I think it's important to note that that's not in either bill right now, and it remains important to us. Otherwise, I think that Mr. Bell and Mr. Strand just touched on what's really there. I will say, though, in regard to the share of the team that is due upon sale, I'd have to go back over the negotiations again, but we parted ways for some time on that very issue, and we didn't. Our initial request was not 18, it was probably more around 25% for a much longer period of time, but it was 18 was a compromise, and is to my recollection, I think, still unprecedented in baseball with any of these agreements. We feel pretty good about that at the Hennepin County Board. As regards the Senate bill, while I understand the spirit and the intention of the Senate, there really isn't much of a role for the county in the Senate bill. So we haven't spent a lot of time understanding that this is a short timeline. There's an opportunity cost to evaluating legislation that comes out of the Capitol this time of year. We haven't done a rigorous examination. I know we have a role in appointing two members of the new Sports Facilities Commission. We would appreciate that. I think we might have some say into siting or some infrastructure working relationship, particularly on rail and some of the things that are going to happen down there. But other than that, I don't have much of a reaction for you on the Senate bill.
Senator Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Opat, there other members and I have had questions about the roof, and maybe you could address the roof issue from the county's perspective.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kelly, I think that our position on a roof at the county level is developed fairly early. And sometimes it helps to go back to the starting point of all this. Is we were requested by the governor to propose to a screening committee in 2004, and we did that. And then negotiated with agreement with the Twins. When there's no state money, that's the ground rules. When we don't have the ground rules involved, we just felt like there wasn't really a place for the county to pay for the roof. We think if there's going to be a roof, mostly the outstate folks benefit from that, then that really needs to be on their dime. We're going to do as much as we can to provide a great baseball park, but we haven't had any role in the roof. So we don't have a position on the roof, except that we prefer not to pay for one or have the county, the tax, applicable in the county to pay for it.
Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Opat, Mr. Strange just talked about eminent domain, and I was kind of surprised by that because I had thought you'd had a lot of conversations, and I had thought there would be willing sellers in this process. And could you talk a little more about that? Because you would be the condemning authority, I believe.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Higgins, I think we hope there'll be willing sellers. I think we had some very, very preliminary discussions with the primary property owner. For those not familiar with the site, there's a partnership that owns most of it. There's some state land there and some county land, but they're not a large group of individual property owners with whom we'd have to negotiate. But I think given that I'm not completely aware of all the eminent domain implications here, but given that the state law is being debated and may change, I think we're just trying to have a placeholder that in the case things should fall apart with the property owners, that we would be able to accomplish an expeditious sale of the property so we can move forward.
Representative Keller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have one question for Commissioner Opat, but I have a question for you, Mr. Chair. Trying to track back the $90 million cap and where that was added, I'm not quite remembering if it was Ways and Means or if it was somewhere else, and where the discussion happened at. Let me just refresh my memory.
Representative Kelleher, it's tough for me to track, too. We faced over 150 amendments on this, the 50 hours of committee hearings. But I believe it was in taxes. I'm getting a nod from Representative Lanny, who's on taxes. It was in the tax committee, I believe.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, there was also a concern by Representative Holberg about funding public transit through some of the flexibility of the language at that time. And that was addressed by the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That helps. Now I'm remembering that Representative Holberg did raise some questions about that. Commissioner Opat, not certainly the top of everyone's list around here, but I think I appreciate your comments about excess in terms of retiring the bond and the issue of the libraries. I think that's an important issue that we do all need to think about and revisit here. And members on our side know that I pulled back the amendment on the House floor out of deference for not wanting to establish any particular position because of the wishes of the author. But I also want to ask you about preserving what I think is a great amenity to this, which is the Cedar Lake Trail. And some people know that we're also trying to finish the trail down to the river, which will, what happens there is it goes all the way from Minnetonka to the riverfront then, and right now the stadium property and the trail are intertwined, and just the commitment of the county to work on this with the Twins to make sure that the best alignment happens on that particular situation, because it is a great public amenity, and I think that you will see people choosing to use that mode of transportation, both foot and bike, in terms of getting to the property.
Commissioner Lopez. Mr. Chairman, Representative Kelleher, I am not as aware of all the details of the Cedar Lake Trail, but I think I can very easily commit to you that we are committed to making all the trail connections and access connections we can with this site. It's a major selling point of it and an asset that we've tried to communicate at every stop. Now, the mayor mentioned bike paths and trails and such, and we have in our debates as well. So I can say to you, we need the ballpark to operate. We think it operates best when people get there easily, no matter how they get there.
Thank you.
Senator Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, Fisher Opat, and if you, I would not suspect that you'd be carrying this number around, but maybe somebody from the county staff who has looked closely at the bond costs could give us the estimate of the interest payments cumulatively over time, if we go with the House bill.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Lawless doesn't think I have that number in my head. And he's right.
Welcome to the committee.
Chairman, Senator Kelly, my name is Dave Lawless. I'm the Director of Budget and Finance for the county. We've estimated a 30-year debt structure, and that's what we plan on issuing the bonds for. I will tell you that depending on the tax revenues and the growth there, we expect that they would probably be paid off somewhat early, even including spending for libraries and for youth activities. But on a 30-year basis, we would expect that the total interest cost would be about $384 million, just slightly less than the actual principal cost of the bonds.
Thank you very much.
All right, members, any further questions for the county? All right. See none. Commissioner Robert, I just want to thank you for all your hard work in the House and spending those 50 hours along with me. So thank you.
Well, back at you, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Kelly as well.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering if we could call forward a representative of the Vikings.
Welcome, Mr. Bagley. Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Bagley, I understand that discussions are continuing relative to the structure of a proposal relative to the Vikings Stadium. Could you give us an update as to where all of that stands at this point?
Mr. Bagley.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lanning, thank you. First of all, thanks for the opportunity to be here this morning and also for including us as part of the discussion. We very much appreciate the opportunity to talk with you today. Let me first emphasize that we do have an agreement with Anoka County. We are in discussions. We're responding to some concerns that we've heard within the legislature made by policymakers, and working on a proposal that we believe will be well received by committee members. So regarding specifics, I think we've been asked to come and testify on Monday and make a presentation. I think on Monday we will be I'll be able to be more specific about those issues. But I would just underscore that we have an agreement with the county, and we're trying to respond to policymakers and trying to perhaps make our proposal more palatable to members of the committee.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Lanning.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Bagley, I'm certainly aware that you do have the agreement with Anoka County, and I take it from what you've said that there is a possibility that there may be some modifications to that agreement that you would bring forward to the committee at that point?
Mr. Bailey.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lanning, that's correct.
Thank you.
Senator Betzel.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I should stress that what is in the Senate bill was not developed with the Vikings. That was something that the Senate planned, or the county. Perhaps it might be helpful for members of the conference committee who aren't quite aware of the history just to have a brief description of how the plan originally was developed, so at least we know what is in play and what may be changing and so forth. Maybe it might be helpful if they explained what got us to the point that we're at, which is different from the Senate's position, but at least what they came in with. So that might be helpful, for sure.
Senator, are you suggesting that Mr. Bagley...
If they were in Oakland County, wanted to just kind of explain the process that they went through for the proposal that at least got to the legislature, again, which is different from the Senate's position, but at least what they came with, that might be helpful.
Gotcha. Great. Mr. Bagley.
Mr. Chair, Senator Betzel, thank you. We have been working with Anoka County for several years, and Dave Johnson, representing the county, can also address these issues. The more formal agreement between the Vikings and Anoka County was achieved last September with a memorandum of understanding agreement that was negotiated between the Vikings ownership and the county. But I'd let former Senator Johnson refer to the Anoka County process and how long they've been involved in this effort. I would say, big picture, the Vikings have been at the Capitol for several years, 7 years, as a matter of fact, and we have brought forward several different financing proposals and for review and discussion and debate. And the one that we've put forth is $280 million private capital contribution from Viking ownership, $280 million contribution from Anoka County, and our original proposal included $115 million to cover the roof costs and infrastructure costs. And that $115 million would be paid for through project-generated revenues in the project. Kind of this was an idea that came before the 2004 legislature in a bill that made it almost all the way through the House before the session kind of unraveled, frankly. But the proposal was based on direction from the Governor's State and Task Force that included these but-for taxes, but-for this development, but-for this stadium. These taxes would not be generated. So the genesis of our funding proposal came from the 2004 Governor's State and Task Force. I can respond further and more specifically if you'd like. Maybe let Dave talk about the where Anoka County is coming from.
Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Dave Johnson. I'm an attorney, and I represent Anoka County. Basically, Anoka County has a long history of involvement in trying to address the Vikings issue. We responded to the Governor's Commission on Stadiums, and we submitted a joint proposal, and we were recommended by the commission with respect to that, and we've been involved ever since. With respect to the agreement, we do have an agreement, as Mr. Bagley said earlier. It's structurally similar to the Twins proposal in many respects. It relies on a countywide sales tax. It relies on a Twins contribution. Many of the provisions with respect to cost overruns and other issues are similar to the Twins. The one piece that is different, and I think is the piece that we've heard concerns about, is the sales tax district to cover the gap and make sure that the facility can be completed with a roof to allow us to compete for a Super Bowl and all the other things. That idea, the genesis of that idea, was in the Governor's Task Force Commission report. We have heard, as you know, over time, as the Vikings have, that there are concerns with a wide variety of state participation. But we had heard that, you know, through the Governor's Task Force, that might be an acceptable route. We've heard your concerns. I guess what I would like to leave you with this is today, is we've heard your concerns about that piece of that. We are working hard to try and address those concerns. We understand that, you know, we are hopeful that we can find a way to bridge the gap that represents, because it's $115 million. by Monday when we make a formal presentation, and we will work diligently in that regard. So that would be my initial comments.
Senator Bentel.
Mr. Chair, and I should note, if the conference committee is not aware that the owner of the Vikings is here, if any questions need to be addressed to him. You know, one of the things that I think have been raised through the legislative process is people say, well, why doesn't Metrodome work out for the Vikings? I mean, we can understand the Twins need a building that is kind of shaped like a baseball diamond. The Metrodome was built as a football stadium, and the Vikings are committed to honoring their lease and staying and not leaving the state. But I think maybe it might be helpful if they could address the changing economics of professional football, why the Metrodome, although it's a football stadium, may not be, you know, where they need to be in the future. So perhaps if they could address that as well.
Mr. Bagley.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bessel, thank you. The along the lines of, I think, Mr. Bell's comments regarding the professional sports economics and the viability of the Metrodome. The Metrodome has served the community very well and has been a terrific investment for the state in return on investment to taxpayers. The problem with the facility for the Vikings is twofold. One, your basic fan amenities. The issue of crowded concourses, where fans at halftime, they have to make the decision of whether to go to the restroom or get a hot dog because you can't do both because of the crowds and the lines, and the lack of premium seating, the lack of a kind of a game day experience that that NFL fans have grown accustomed to and desire, things that we were focused on in our proposal in Anoka County. So the fan amenities are significantly substandard, I guess, among NFL standards or NFL facilities. The other issue is the revenue streams. The Vikings have pretty much exhausted every opportunity for revenue opportunities at the Metrodome, and there just aren't. There are no club seats. There's not enough premium seating. The suites are difficult to market. So there's no parking for the club. So in terms of revenue streams, the Metrodome does not measure up in terms of a modern NFL facility, and we're trying to address that issue with our proposal in Anoka County to have tailgating, fan experience, the revenue streams, and again the opportunities for different kinds of seats, different kinds of concessions, ability to move through the facility, and the like.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, just on that point, first of all, Margaret Langfeld, the chair of the county board, is also here, as well as Terry Johnson and others that can answer technical questions. But I think one of the messages we'd like the committee to know is we look at this as much more than a stadium deal. It's a much larger economic development for the North Metro area. Mr. Wolf, we're leveraging $1 billion contribution from Mr. Wolf with respect to the private development that's going to generate an immediate return in the form of property tax revenue for the city and the county and sales tax revenue for the state. And so this is the one area where it might be a little different than the Twins Hennepin County deal is that it actually leverages at the front end the economic development and the larger private investment. And so we look at it as more than just resolving the Metrodome issue.
I'll ask one more question, and I know others have questions as well, too. We spent a lot of time, of course, on the Twins issue on the roof, and perhaps maybe they could address that from the Vikings standpoint. Now, let me just comment. I have a personal bias myself. I used to go to games at Old Met Stadium. I enjoyed it. Even it was freezing cold, I enjoyed it. But I just feel that the crowd that has been at the Metrodome since 1982 probably is not the crowd that's going to want to go out there and sit out there at an open-air stadium. Now, a different crowd might go, but I think that, so I know that it changed from the original proposal from Anoka County for a fixed roof and so forth, so obviously that's part, people are having questions about that, maybe that can be addressed as well, too.
Yeah. Mr. Bagley.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bessel, thank you. Our original proposal, as we talked about, uses project-generated revenues to fund the roof and infrastructure.
in terms of, and our agreement is for retractable roof stadium. In terms of the future of the Metrodome, if the three tenants are successful in with their projects and move out, then there's going to be a need for events in this market that could be hosted by a large venue such as our facility as proposed in Anoka County. In order to get a Super Bowl in Minnesota, we would have to have a roof. In order to get Final Four, which is played in March, we would need a roof. So there are opportunities for national events during the winter months that would benefit the community and the state if we were had the roof on the facility.
Mm-hmm. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Bagley, or Mr. Johnson, if you could just give me a little idea. It probably sounds like I get around, but I really don't. But I know that Mr. Wolf can attest to this, that we went to the Green Bay Packers game, Viking game in Green Bay. And Lambeau Field is truly a stadium that is used by the community all week long. There's events, and not only just sports events. There's weddings, and it's truly a community feel to that. Is there? is this stadium proposal in Anoka County beyond the private development, economic development? Is this going to be something has a bigger picture to it as far as bringing in the community into that stadium and beyond just the perimeters of the.
Mr. Bagley, will there be weddings at this new stadium?
Mr. Chair, Senator Rosen, aren't you married?
I am married.
Okay. We've looked at the Lambeau Field model, and they put a $300 million renovation. It's still an outdoor stadium, but they put $300 million into it, and provided a much greater fan experience and also generate, increase their revenue opportunities. But in terms of non-football and outside, events, much as the Metrodome has served as they say, and we agree, a community rec room, we believe that this new facility would be available for high school and college sporting events, for cultural and community events, for we've gotten programs proposed in terms of the architecture, and we can get into these more specifically on Monday when we talk a little bit more specifically about project details, but what's exactly in the project that Mr. Wolf and partners are proposing. But there's ice skating, there's a fan game day experience, a plaza, but the facility we want and need to have it hosted and host events year-round. Community events, cultural events, soccer, the National Sports Center is just down the road, and we're going to design the facility and the field for to play soccer. So there's a lot of utility for our proposal, and we can get into that in a little bit more detail when we show you some of the specifics of the project on Monday.
Thank you. Members, any further questions? Representative Keller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bagley, if you could comment on the question that came up earlier about the Twins and LEED certification and what the plans are, and it sounds like we're going to have a more detailed discussion of this on Monday, but can you give us an overview of that, what you're planning on including?
Mr. Bagley.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Kelleher. We have had a number of conversations with you and with Senator Higgins and others about requests and encouragement to do environmental friendly and really look at what we can do to make it a green stadium, and we have not looked at the cost issue that came up with regarding the LEED study that came up with the Twins testimony. But Mr. Wolf has spoken to Mr. Kraft at New England Patriots, and their stadium in New England has received several awards and recognition for what they've done. They've for example, and we were looking at these options, they built a water reuse system which treats sewage from the stadium and produces high quality, safe water that is reused in all
all of the stadium's 1,000 restrooms and toilets, toilet facilities. They've used 90% of the old stadium. They used recycled. Over 15,000 tons of material was recycled into the new facility. Stadium seats in the Gillette Stadium contain about 80 tons of recycled plastic. So into the construction, there was a great deal of thought put into it, and we, again, have talked with the Patriots, and we've talked with members of the conference committee about this idea, and we're enthusiastic about it. And then just in addition and final point is that our Northern Lights proposal in Blaine, as Mr. Johnson said, covers more than a stadium. It also covers more than a private development. Of the 740 acres of property, 480 acres are developable, and 260 acres of that property are focused on and will be preserved wetlands and trails. And we will not only respect, but we will enhance our natural resources, and we're very much looking forward to being a key element of our development, the Northern Lights in Anoka County, to include that wetland preserve. And we've been working very closely with the Army Corps of Engineers, the Rice Creek Watershed District, and the county and the city of Blaine and others. And we're working, as we speak, there's a meeting going on the wetlands issues, and we're very much committed to again, preserving, enhancing, and respecting our natural resources.
And
Representative Keller.
Mr. Chair, this one may not be quite as easy of a question, Mr. Bagley, but I do want you to at least comment on the disposal of the Metrodome site for us, because that's handled in the Senate bill, and I noticed that, and that's an issue that I think many of us are still interested in. So if you could just comment.
Sure. Mr. Bagley.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kelleher, the current law, as you know, has the proceeds of the Metrodome going into the football stadium account. Now, that football stadium account was created, I believe, in 2002 or 01 in a conference committee that financed the Twins ballpark through arbitrage, which didn't produce a ballpark, but it did become law. The part of the conference committee report included that language that proceeds of the football stadium account would be created for the Vikings and University of Minnesota, and that the proceeds of the Metrodome would go into that account and be used for financing of a football stadium. Now, that was back when the Vikings and University were in discussions and worked hard to try to see if we could make a Viking Gopher Stadium on campus work, and I think we both came to the conclusion that there were issues that couldn't be overcome, and so that's the history on that discussion and on the law. Our opinion is that's current law. We understand that this body and this committee and the legislature and governor will have a say as to what happens with the Metrodome. I think Mr. Wolf has been clear about his interest in the property and also interest in what he thinks, looking at it from a developer's eye, what he believes is the opportunity for that property with downtown Minneapolis kind of moving east and downtown east development, that there is an opportunity to revitalize and that area and put some mixed use development in there, would like to be part of that discussion, but that's kind of our quick take on it. And Mr. Wolf will be available next week to testify, and you can ask him more specifically about that issue.
Ripson Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Bagley, could you comment on the feeling of the Vikings relative to tying the funding to a metropolitan-wide referendum? The half-cent sales tax that would in large part fund transit, and a piece of it would fund the stadium. But what's the position of the Vikings relative to that scenario?
Mr. Bagley.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lanning, the Senate proposal was not our idea, but we think it does build a stadium not only for the Vikings but for the Twins. We have an original proposal that we went through hearings and committees in both the House and Senate and talked about and zeroed in on, and that proposal is under, you know, we have our sleeves rolled up here with the county, and we're working on responding to some of the concerns about our original proposal, which was our recommendation, again, based on the Governor's Stadium Task Force. I think, you know, this committee and legislature and governor will determine what is the best funding source. You know, we appreciate very much your consideration of the Vikings and that you're keeping your options open on the Vikings. You know, this entire process for us has been one in an effort to kind of get us to the table to see if we can negotiate a solution that works for everyone. Again, if this Seven County Metro tax and transit tax does not work, then let's see if we can. We know that our ownership is committed to this community, to this project. They have offered to invest $1 billion of private capital into this economy to create thousands of jobs and millions of dollars in tax revenue and do tremendous return on investment for the state of Minnesota. And so we appreciate you keeping us in the discussion to see if there's a way to take advantage of that offer to invest that type of capital. We're open to proposals. I think we'll have more specific recommendations or at least a proposal for you to consider that's made, again, responding to some of the concerns that we've heard about our original proposal.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Lanning.
I'd like to ask the same question of Anoka County. What is the position of Anoka County relative to this idea of a metropolitan-wide referendum on the half-cent sales tax, and what's the county feeling about that proposal?
Mr. John.
Mr. Chair and Representative Lanning, I don't have an election certificate in Anoka County, so we may want to ask the county board chair to come down and address it. We are very appreciative that we are allowed to be here to make the case for solving all the stadiums now. I think, as the commissioner will talk to, there are transportation and transit needs in the county as well. We got into this because we were responding to what we thought was a state, local, and team partnership to resolve these issues, and we understand as things go on, they can change. So we see a lot of positives in what the Senate has proposed, and we appreciate the opportunity to be there. We're also working diligently on our agreement to address the concerns we've heard from folks in the House and in the Senate and other places to see if we can meet the benchmarks that we believe are being laid out for us. And with that, I'll let the person with the election certificate.
Welcome, Commissioner.
Thank you. I am Margaret Langfield, Chair of the Anoka County Board of Commissioners. It's a pleasure to be with you. Personally, I love it. I mean, I think it's a great solution. It wasn't our plan, of course, so it isn't what we proposed, but I personally, and I know a lot of other county commissioners throughout the metro area, are very excited about the possibility of a transit, being able to expand transit. We're in desperate need of that in this metro area, so that part of it has a very broad appeal, I think. And, you know, the value of that Senate proposal of getting those stadiums paid off really quickly saves an awful lot of tax dollars. So that, in my mind, is beautiful as well.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, appreciate your response. What if this were put to a vote and the metropolitan area voted against it and said no to it? What would that do to the prospects of the Viking Stadium in Anoka County?
Commissioner.
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. You know, I think the broad appeal is that it could possibly pass in the metro area. That's sort of the word out on the street, that it could pass. It's hard to know. It's very hard to know. I don't think anybody's done any kind of polling or anything to know.
Mr. Lanning?
Senator Betzel. As long as the commissioner is here, maybe we could address the issue of if this Viking Stadium is delayed, what are the consequences? How long can that land in Blaine stay available? What's the the dynamics for delaying it even a year.
Mm-hmm.
Commissioner.
And Mr. Chairman, Senator Betzold, I was with the City of Blaine people this morning right before I came down here, and we did talk about that. Blaine has put a moratorium on that land while they study this option, the option of that 740-acre development and having an NFL stadium and also several other options. So the land is not in public ownership. It's multiple owners, and some of them, a couple pieces had been purchased by Mr. Wilk, and they can speak to that issue. But there is great demand for development in Blaine, and it's just building so rapidly. And land values are escalating very rapidly. And there's only so much time that the city can hold that land off from development. I mean, some of the parcels are owned by a very large developer in the metro area, and they would like to do what they want to do because they see, big dollar signs. So that's a problem, that it gets delayed. A very large issue in that is the additional cost just from inflation.
Mr. Bailey.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Bessel, just two quick points on that. One, and is going to make a point about inflation, much as the Twins have testified, and the longer we delay these issues, the more they are going to cost. Steel prices, concrete prices, construction materials are only going up. Inflation is going up. Labor costs are going up. So there's a real need to address all of these issues, Vikings, Gophers, and Twins. In addition, in our view, from the Vikings, our partner in this proposal at the county, we think that the window of opportunity is maybe closing, and we need to get this done. So we'll just make those two quick comments.
Senator Bessel.
Mr. Chair, I think I can restate to the Conference Committee, because Representative Westerberg and I represent Blaine, and there is an immense amount of pressure to do things with that land. I don't know that the options are going to stay around long. And we'll get a full presentation on this later on. I know some people say, well, why do we want to go all the way up to Anoka County? And I can assure people that Representative Westerberg and I do make it home at night. It's not that far away. And in fact, if you went from downtown Minneapolis to the Mall of America and go from downtown Minneapolis to the site we're talking about, it is shorter to go to Blaine from downtown Minneapolis than it is to the Mall of America. It's not really that far away.
But we have a train.
Well, but we're going to get North Star. But one of the other things, and I think the Vikings can probably address this too, is the Metrodome was put in downtown Minneapolis. It was the expectation that development would come there, and it didn't. But this is a plan that is going to be developing an area which is going to be developed with or without a stadium. That was always the plan, to develop this land, and a stadium changes it one way. Without a stadium, it goes a different way. But I think the Vikings particularly are interested in having everything in one location, because right now they have their training camp in Mankato, they have their headquarters practice facilities in Prairie, they play their games in downtown Minneapolis, and they would like to consolidate everything in one place. And being in a downtown area isn't necessary, as it is for the Twins, but they need to be in a place where there's land that can draw people and the developments that you're going to be hearing about. So I think that's part of the whole concept that we've been talking about for actually quite a while, and is actually was presented as part of the Governor's Task Force in 2004.
Thank you, Senator. And it sounds like we're going to hear more from the Vikings on Monday, so we can follow up with the county. Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A follow-up question, if I might, for the Commissioner. Should the end product here not include this half-cent sales tax that would be voted on by the metropolitan area? Does the Anoka County original proposal still stand? Does Anoka County and the Vikings together still wish to proceed with that proposal that has been before us now for some time?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lanning, absolutely.
Thank you.
All right, members, any further questions? If not, thank you both. I want to thank Anoka County and the Vikings for their hard work on this, and for rolling up your sleeves this weekend and continuing to work on it. Members, it would be my plan then, if we have no further questions or comments, Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. There's been a couple of questions asked about the sale proceeds of the Met Center. Mr. Lester is here, and I was just wondering if there's a chance he would want to weigh in. He may shake his head no. He may shake his head yes.
I believe he left, so he's not shaking his head.
Because the question I came back is if in the Senate bill there is a proposal for the proceeds. There was also something done in 202 in the conference committee that never took traction. So we are back to the existing legislation for the creation of the dome that probably talks to that disposition. And maybe Monday or something we can get that information as to what are the requirements for the proceeds.
Just with some shaking of heads, could we get that info to the conference committee in the next day or two? And I see heads shaking yes. All right. Thank you, Representative Peterson. Members, any further comments or questions? I just want to again thank all of you for your hard work and dedication. I think we're at the point now where we can start rolling up our sleeves and getting to work. I know staff will be working on putting some things together for Senator Kelly and I over the next day or two. And Senator Kelly, do you want to make a comment before we adjourn?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just for the information of people who are here, the Senate is planning session 11. Yeah. So our aim would be to meet from 9 to 11 on Monday and then convene and recess for session and then continue our work later in the day. And I think on Monday morning we would begin the conversation, bring members up to speed on what the Transportation 2030 plan does have to say about transit and what our opportunity there is. But we'd also, I think, like to, assuming the conversations between the Vikings and the Anoka County bear fruit, probably have them introduce it Monday morning if they're ready, otherwise Monday afternoon after session, so that we'd have time to really start to think about what our options are in that large amount of space between the House bill and the Senate bill. So that would be the goal for Monday, would be to start seeing what some of the options are and hearing about if there is some modification of the football proposal. So as Representative Finstad said, I do think staff have pointed out some areas where there are smaller wording changes where staff members could get together and make some recommendations to the conference committee, you know, sort of in groups about how to deal with those so that we can, you know, move pretty rapidly through some of the detailed part of the work. It'll be 9 o'clock, room 15 in the state capitol.
So, Senator Kelly, I can't resist. Since we're not meeting this weekend, does that mean we're not players up here?
I suspect there might be some anglers and some folks who like their moms on the committee, and that we'll be paying attention to those other goals over the weekend.
Okay, great. Thank you again, members, and we will adjourn.